I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors and the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board. It's Thursday, June 6, 2013. It's about 8:31. We're meeting at the Community Center in the Sierra Room, and I'd just like to say that our mayor, Bob Kroll, is having knee surgery as we speak, and we wish him well. Alan, do you want to do roll?
Supervisor Bonkowski.
Here.
Supervisor McKenna.
Here.
Supervisor Shirk.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Abboud.
Here.
You have a quorum present, madam.
Thank you. And before I call Bill McCord up to lead us in a prayer, I'd just like to have a moment of silence for Janice Ayers, who passed away on Memorial Day. Janice was an icon in our community, a former member of the Board of Supervisors, and a champion for seniors until 92 years of age. Thank you, and if I could have Bill McCord come forward to lead us in a prayer.
Let us pray. Oh, Lord our God, I ask your blessing upon this Board of Supervisors as the board deliberates their responsibilities. May they receive the guidance of your wisdom. Amen.
We now are at item number 5, public comment, and the public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Board of Supervisors and the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board, the Carson City Redevelopment Authority, and the Carson City Board of Health Boards. In order for members of the public to participate in the board's consideration of an agenda item, the board strongly encourages members of the public to comment on an agenda item during that item itself. No action may be taken on a matter raised under public comment unless the item has been specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. The mayor or mayor pro tem retains discretion to only provide for the public comment under public comment item and not call for or allow individual item public comment at the time of any board's consideration of any item on the agenda involving an off-site tour of the board or any persons or entities due process appeal or hearing rights provided by the statute of the Carson City Municipal Code. And with that said, is there any public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 6, approval of the minutes for March 21st, 2013.
I have one correction on the top of page 2. It looks like after the first motion, the time stamp is wrong. Other than that, I'd make a motion to approve the minutes of March 21st, 2013, with that one correction.
Second.
Any public comment on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. I'll move to item number 7. Possible action on the adoption of the agenda. I've been informed that agenda items 9-7A and 9-7B will be pulled for discussion. Are there any other changes to the agenda?
None that I'm aware of, Madam Chair.
All right, with that, I would come back to the board and entertain a motion for the adoption of the agenda minus those items.
I move to approve the agenda, pulling two items from the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And now we move to item number 8, presentation of a proclamation and recognition of the Comstock Sports Organization. Is Eric Ingbar here?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
motion.
Thank you.
Whereas the Comstock Sports Organization, a local 501c3 nonprofit charity, annually runs the Comstock Shootout Soccer Tournament staffed entirely by volunteers. And whereas the Comstock Shootout Soccer Tournament is an open individual tournament for boys and girls divisions from U10 through U19 in a variety of game formats and competitive divisions. And whereas the Comstock Shootout started in 1994 is Nevada's oldest soccer tournament. This year, for the 20th anniversary tournament, 152 teams participated and 748 referee slots were covered by volunteers for the two tournament weekends. And whereas the Comstock Shootout Soccer Tournament has a tremendous annual economic impact on Carson City, and with the support of the Comstock Sports Organization, all proceeds from the event are used to support scholarships, training, and education of coaches, referees, youth sports activities, and facility improvements. Now, therefore, I, on behalf of Robert L. Kroll, Mayor of Carson City of Nevada, do hereby extend this proclamation and our sincerest appreciation to the Comstock Sports Organization for the incredible work and support that they have provided over the years, not only for our local youth, but the youth of our state. Thank you so much.
Thank you on behalf of the board of the Comstock Sports Organization. That's myself, Ralph Johnson, who's here with me, Joe Briggs, Peter Fishburn, Tracy Ferrante, and Fred Schmidt. Thank you to the supervisors for this. We couldn't hold this event without the tremendous support of three local organizations, Carson City AYSO, Capital Football Club, and Capital Soccer Club, and hundreds of volunteers. And obviously, ultimately, we have to thank the people of Carson City and all of you, the supervisors, Parks and Recreation, through them, for the huge support of youth sports that this community has, which is second to none, in both in this state and this region. So thank you
so much. Thank you. Moving on to item number 9. At this point, we'll bring back items 97A and 97B for discussion.
We should approve the consent agenda first and ask if anybody wants something else for
me. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Before we do that, can we ask anybody in the audience if there's anything they want pulled from the consent agenda? Public. Nope. I move to approve the consent agenda consisting of one item from the assessor, three items from finance. 92A is resolution 2013-R23. 92C, temporary and local funds, is resolution 2013-R24. One item from the airport authority, three items from fire, two items from Parks and Rec. One item from Parks and Rec Open Space. 97 has been pulled in its entirety. Two items from the city manager. 9-8A is resolution 2013-R25, and resolution 98B is resolution 2013-R26.
Second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Motion. Moving on to item number 10, we recess as the Board of Supervisors and reconvene as the Liquor and Entertainment Board. And may the record reflect that we still have a quorum. And I'll move to item number 12, approval of the minutes for February 7, 2013 and March 7, 2013. We should probably take those separately.
I move to approve the minutes of February 7th, 2013 for the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes.
And I move to approve the minutes, March 7th, 2013 minutes of the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Item number 13, Public Works, business license. The first item for possible action to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's, a catered affairs liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2011 South Carson Street in Carson City. Good morning. And Lena, do you want to take us through this?
This item action to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's, a catered affair liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2811 South Carson Street. Mr. Herzl is looking to remain the liquor manager, and he's looking to add the catering portion onto his dining room with beer and wine license.
Okay. Thank you. Just my question, how do you, what procedure do you follow in terms of alcohol training for your servers?
Well, anyone who's working in the catering part of it is required to be aware of asking for, you know, valid ID and checking ID whenever we're out at a mobile unit, and that's...
John, could we get you to identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm sorry. My name is John Herzl. I own Grandma Hattie's Restaurant, a catered affair catering. So.
Thank you.
John, I want to thank you for another well-run operation last night. We had a meeting there in his back room. Catering is away from the premises. How do you control what goes on there? Are you going to be there personally? Are you going to have someone who you trust?
Myself or my son, Joey. This is my son, Joey.
Okay.
You know, either he or myself are on site for any of the off-premise things we do. So I don't, you know, I don't do anything off-premise that I can't be there and control myself.
Thank you.
Any other comment?
And obviously, ultimately, we have to thank the people of Carson City and all of you, the supervisors, Parks and Recreation, through them, for the huge support of youth sports that this community has, which is second to none, in, both in this state and this region. So thank you
so much. Thank you. Moving on to item number 9. At this point, we'll bring back items 97A and 97B for discussion.
We should approve the consent agenda first and ask if anybody wants something else for
Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Before we do that, can we ask anybody in the audience if there's anything they want pulled from the consent agenda? Public? Nope. I move to approve the consent agenda consisting of one item from the assessor, three items from finance. 92A is resolution 2013-R23. 92C, temporary and local funds, is resolution 2013-R24. One item from the airport authority, three items from fire, two items from parks and rec. One item from Parks and Rec Open Space. 97 has been pulled in its entirety. Two items from the city manager. 9-8A is resolution 2013-R25, and resolution 98B is resolution 2013-R26.
Second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Motion passed. Moving on to item number 10, we recess as the Board of Supervisors and reconvene as the Liquor and Entertainment Board. And may the record reflect that we still have a quorum. And I'll move to item number 12, approval of the minutes for February 7, 2013 and March 7, 2013. We should probably take those separately.
I move to approve the minutes of February 7th, 2013 for the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. And
I move
the next
to
one?
Approve the minutes, March 7th, 2013 minutes of the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Item number 13, Public Works, business license. The first item for possible action to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's, a catered affairs liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2011 South Carson Street in Carson City. Good morning. And Lena, do you want to take us through this?
This item action to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's, a catered affair liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2811 South Carson Street. Mr. Herzl is looking to remain the liquor manager, and he's looking to add the catering portion onto his dining room with beer and wine license.
Okay, thank you. Just my question, how do you, what procedure do you follow in terms of alcohol training for your servers?
Well, anyone who's working in the catering part of it is required to be aware of asking for, you know, valid ID and checking ID whenever we're out at a mobile unit, and that's...
John, could we get you to identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm sorry. My name is John Herzl. I own Grandma Hattie's Restaurant, a catered affair catering. So.
Thank you.
John, I want to thank you for another well-run operation last night. We had a meeting there in his back room. Catering is away from the premises. How do you control what goes on there? Are you going to be there personally? Are you going to have someone who you trust?
Myself or my son, Joey. This is my son, Joey.
Okay.
You know, either he or myself are on site for any of the off-premise things we do. So I don't, you know, I don't do anything off-premise that I can't be there and control myself.
Thank you.
Any other comment from the board or questions?
John, I've been to enough of your events. You've been around long enough. I've personally experienced how you run your operation. I have no qualms.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, is there any public comment? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's / a catered affair liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2811 South Carson Street, Carson City.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Moving on to item number 13B, Lena, do you want to take us through this one?
This item is for possible action to approve Francisco as the liquor manager for Mi Casa 2, liquor license number 13-29690, located at 3809 North Carson Street. He is purchasing the business from the current owner, and he will also be the liquor manager on the license. They're applying for a dining room with hard liquor license.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question to you first of all, your name for the record.
Francisco Paredes.
Thank you. How do you protect against sales to minors in your operation now that you're taking it over?
Well, we have been working with the Sheriff's Department all the time, so we get the class and certified for the employees and myself. So we, you know, take care for all the minors, and before they order anything or sit at the bar, we ask for ID, and that's a process we follow too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question for the sheriff. On the application, there was a DUI conviction in 87, but that's no longer on his record. Are we okay there? Just being sensitive because of the last time we had a person with a DUI?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
And, Kenny, there was another item on the background check, too, that were you satisfied with that? Okay, thank you.
Yes, we were fully satisfied with the investigation. Thank you.
Hearing that, is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring this back to the board for a motion.
Okay. I move to approve Francisco Paredes as the liquor manager for... I move to approve Francisco Paredes as the liquor manager for Mi Casa 2, Liquor license number 13-29690, located at 3809 North Carson Street, Carson City.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. Francisco, thank you for investing in Carson City.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be
here. We'll check out and make sure your food's good.
Stop by. Thank you. Stop by anytime. Thank you.
Is there any public comment at this time? If not, I'll move up to item number 15 for possible action to adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors.
I move to adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Now, at this time, we will entertain and for discussion the items that were pulled from the consent agenda.
Kim Bell, purchasing contracts. The first item, item 97A, is a contract with Physicians Select Management Company. This contract is a contract to provide qualified physicians, nurse practitioners, or physician's assistants who are licensed in the state of Nevada to provide medical services for all persons in the custody of the Carson City Sheriff and the Carson City Regional Juvenile Detention Center. With that, I open it for questions, I guess.
Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
My understanding is that this is an extension of an existing contract?
This is a renewal of a contract. We had a contract last year, which was 11-12. This is a new contract for this new year.
Board or questions?
John, I've been to enough of your events. You've been around long enough. I've personally experienced how you run your operation. I have no qualms.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, is there any public comment? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to approve the addition of a catering liquor license to Grandma Hattie's / a catered affair liquor license. Liquor license number 13-4020, located at 2811 South Carson Street, Carson City.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Moving on to item number 13B. Lena, do you want to take us through this one?
This item is for possible action to approve Francisco as the liquor manager for Mi Casa 2, liquor license number 13-29690, located at 3809 North Carson Street. He is purchasing the business from the current owner, and he will also be the liquor manager on the license. They're applying for a dining room with hard liquor license.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question to you would be, oh, first of all, your name for the record.
Francisco Paredes.
Thank you. How do you protect against sales to minors in your operation now that you're taking it over?
Well, we have been working with the Sheriff's Department all the time, so we get the class and certified for the employees and myself. So we, you know, take care for all the minors, and before they order anything or sit at the bar, we ask for ID. And that's a process we follow too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question for the sheriff. On the application, there was a DUI conviction in 87, but that's no longer on his record. Are we okay there? Just being sensitive because of the last time we had a person with a DUI?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
And, Kenny, there was another item on the background check, too, that were you satisfied with that? Okay, thank you.
Yes, we were fully satisfied with the investigation. Thank you.
Hearing that, is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring this back to the board for a motion.
I move to approve Francisco Paredes as the liquor manager for I move to approve Francisco Paredes as the liquor manager for Mi Casa 2, liquor license number 13-29690, located at 3809 North Carson Street, Carson City.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. Francisco, thank you for investing in Carson City.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be
here. We'll check out and make sure your food's good.
Stop by. Thank you. Stop by anytime. Thank you.
Is there any public comment at this time? If not, I'll move up to item number 15 for possible action to adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors.
I move to adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Now, at this time, we will entertain for discussion the items that were pulled from the consent agenda.
Kim Bell, purchasing contracts. The first item 97A is a contract with Physicians Select Management Company. This contract is a contract to provide qualified physicians, nurse practitioners, or physicians assistants who are licensed in the state of Nevada to provide medical services for all persons in the custody of the Carson City Sheriff and the Carson City Regional Juvenile Detention Center. With that, I open it for questions, I guess.
Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
My understanding is that this is an extension of an existing contract?
This is a renewal of a contract. We had a contract last year, which was 11-12. This is a new contract for this new year.
And even though it potentially starts today, the first billing would fall in fiscal year 2013-2014.
Right, July 1.
Okay, thank you.
Morning, Kim.
Morning.
I had a couple of questions. One, I did pull the NRS statute and what it says of professional services that excludes open bidding on this. What is classified as professional services? Is it just medical or is it any other
field? No, any kind of like engineer, architect, is professional services.
Would construction be?
No.
No.
Construction falls under totally different. It's 338.
Okay. And out of the Physician Select Management and the Diamond Pharmacy Services, when was the last time we had an outside or a competitive bid or some other aspects that shows pricing? Or do we ever do that in this case? I know we're not obligated to do it, but how long has this contract been in effect? And
I'm not aware of the length of time that Physician Select has been doing it. This is the first year that we're doing we bid for the pharmacy contract.
Marina, would you like to?
Yes. For the record, Marina Works. In the past, this is something that was done by a higher physician. It has been brought out to bid before. It's very difficult to get bids for the service within the jail. And it was for a time done by, for example, Nevada Health Centers. And then there was a time that we had a very rickety time getting anybody in there. So we've had this contract now. I believe we're in probably our fourth year. And we have not brought it out to bid in the last 4 years. However, they're doing an excellent job. We've had consistency. The sheriffs have the coverage that he needs. And so we don't see any reason at this time to try to disrupt a situation that sometimes can get very rocky.
I understand, but would it be advantageous for us to look for bids while this is in motion, while we put this in? We'd have time to look for next year, if possible. Just a thought. I don't care if you do or not. I just wanted to bring it forward.
We certainly could. If you'd like it to go out to bid, we can bring a bidding process out next year.
We can't bid it. We don't bid.
Oh, that's right. It's professional service.
Right. What we do is, the term bid is being used kind of a little bit. What we do is actually do a proposal based on qualifications. And then we select the firm that provides the most qualified service. And then what we do is look at the pricing. If that pricing falls within our estimate, then we award the contract. If we can't negotiate a successful price, then we go to the second person that sits submits on a proposal, but we don't use price as an element of competition.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board? Any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I'll do it. I move to determine that contract number 1314-049 is a contract for professional services and therefore not suitable for public bidding pursuant to NRS 332.115, and to approve contract number 1314-049, a request for professional services to be provided by Physician Select Management, LLC, through June 30th, 2014, for an amount not to exceed the cost of $115,000 to be funded from the inmate medical care and medical care accounts in the Public Assistance Fund as provided in fiscal year 2013-2014.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Nothing passes. I mean, motion passes. Excuse me. Yeah. Moving on to item number 97B. Kim, are you going to take us through this as well?
Yes. This is a contract for the Carson City Jail Pharmaceuticals, and the cost is $75,000. This is to Diamond Pharmacy Services to be funded from the Public Assistance Inmate Medical Care Accounts. We did an RFP and advertised on the website, did an advertisement in the newspaper. I believe we had five firms. We had 10 firms, and we narrowed it down to three firms for interviews, and Diamond Pharmacy was selected as the best qualified consultant. If there's any questions, I also submitted late material. Diamond Pharmacy is a large corporation. And
even though it potentially starts today, the first billing would fall in fiscal year 2013-2014.
Right, July 1.
Okay, thank you.
Morning, Kim.
Morning.
I had a couple of questions. One, I did pull the NRS statute and what it says of professional services that excludes open bidding on this. What is classified as professional services? Is it just medical, or is it any other?
No,
field?
Any kind of like engineer, architect is professional services.
Would construction be?
No.
No.
Construction
okay.
falls under totally different. It's okay. 338.
Okay. And out of the Physician Select Management and the Diamond Pharmacy Services, when was the last time we had an outside or a competitive bid or some other aspects that shows pricing? Or do we ever do that in this case? I know we're not obligated to do it, but how long has this contract been in effect? And
I'm not aware of the length of time that Physician Select has been doing it. This is the first year that we're doing we bid for the pharmacy contract.
Marina, would you like to?
Yes, for the record, Marina Works. In the past, this is something that was done by a higher physician. It has been brought out to bid before. It's very difficult to get bids for the service within the jail. And it was for a time done by, for example, Nevada Health Centers. And then there was a time that we had a very rickety time getting anybody in there. So we've had this contract now, I believe we're in probably our fourth year. And we have not brought it out to bid in the last 4 years. However, they're doing an excellent job. We've had consistency. The sheriffs have the coverage that he needs. And so we don't see any reason at this time to try to disrupt a situation that sometimes can get very rocky.
I understand, but would it be advantageous for us to look for bids while this is in motion, while we put this in? We'd have time to look for next year, if possible, just a thought. I don't care if you do or not. I just wanted to bring it forward.
We certainly could. If you'd like it to go out to bid, we can bring a bidding process out next year.
We can't bid it. We don't bid.
Oh, that's right. It's professional service.
Right. What we do is, the term bid is being used kind of a little bit. What we do is actually do a proposal based on qualifications. And then we select the firm that provides the most qualified service. And then what we do is look at the pricing. If that pricing falls within our estimate, then we award the contract. If we can't negotiate a successful price, then we go to the second person that sits submits on a proposal, but we don't use price as an element of competition.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board? Any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to determine that contract number 1314-049 is a contract for professional services and therefore not suitable for public bidding pursuant to NRS 332.115, and to approve contract number 1314-049, a request for professional services to be provided by Physician Select Management LLC through June 30th, 2014, for an amount not to exceed the cost of $115,000 to be funded from the inmate medical care and medical care accounts in the Public Assistance Fund as provided in fiscal year 2013-2014.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Nothing passes. I mean, motion passes. Excuse me. Yeah. Moving on to item number 97B. Kim, are you going to take us through this as well?
Yes. This is a contract for the Carson City Jail Pharmaceuticals, and the cost is $75,000. This is to Diamond Pharmacy Services to be funded from the Public Assistance Inmate Medical Care Accounts. We did an RFP and advertised on the website, did an advertisement in the newspaper. I believe we had five firms. We had 10 firms, and we narrowed it down to three firms for interviews, and Diamond Pharmacy was selected as the best qualified consultant. If there's any questions, I also submitted late material. Diamond Pharmacy is a large corporation, and they reviewed the document. They had their attorney review it, and they made suggested comments. The district attorney here reviewed and approved the comments that were suggested, and therefore the late material is those changes.
Thank you, Kim. Discussion.
Kim. Is the sheriff okay with this, or sheriff, are you okay with this? Okay.
Kim, I have the same questions I originally did on the other one, but you answered the questions already by saying it was out to bid by 10 firms and so forth,
right.
So I appreciate that, and thank you.
Kim, who was involved in the interview process, or Marina?
For the record, Marina Works. I was involved, our health officer, Dr. Pintar, and then Dr. O'Shaughnessy, who's the medical director for our medical services in the jail. We all three did the interviews.
Going through the biography and the application for Diamond Pharmacy, I mean, these guys are impressive. It's a family-run business.
It is.
How many locations? Like 50,000 locations?
Quite a few. And they do a lot of jails. In fact, they do the center down in Las Vegas, so we had called them. We called all their references as well, and they came with very high references. And they give us a pharmacist 24 access to a pharmacist 24 hours a day. So with any questions, anybody can call from the jail. They're going to give the deputies training not only in dispensing medications, but how they can access a pharmacist if they need to after hours. So I think they have a very comprehensive service.
And if the amount towards the end of the year gets over the $75,000, does that come back to the board for an augmentation, or how does that work?
Exactly. We'd have to come back and augment it.
It'll be okay. An amendment to the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me. Any public comment on this issue? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to approve contract 1213-116 for Carson City Jail Pharmaceuticals in the amount of $75,000 to Diamond Pharmacy Services to be funded from the Public Assistance Inmate Medical Care Accounts for fiscal year 2013-2014.
Discussion on the motion. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 18, City Manager, are you going to do the introductions?
Actually, I'm just going to introduce Ed James, Madam Mayor, and have Ed kind of run us through the what's been going on in the Carson City watershed, Carson River watershed.
Good morning. For the record, Ed James with the Carson Water Subconservancy, and with me today is Brenda Hunt. She is the Watershed Coordinator. And what we're going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Brenda. She's going to talk about some of the challenges and issues that have been going on in the watershed. Also a little background, because a lot of the stuff we are doing has been built over the years. There is action taken by the different counties, even by this board, which you may or may not be aware of, some of the direction that we are working on. And then I'll talk about two projects that we're currently working on in this area that will directly affect Carson City. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Brenda.
Good morning, supervisors, members of the staff, and the public. I'm Brenda Hunt. I'm the Watershed Coordinator and the Carson River Coalition Coordinator for the Carson Water Subconservancy District. Okay. So this is the Carson River watershed. It begins up in the High Sierra of Alpine County, California. The river travels 184 miles to the Carson Sink in Churchill County, Nevada. It's nearly 4,000 square miles in size, and over 85% of it is federally owned lands. The watershed encompasses the six counties listed here, including Carson City. Oops, sorry, I went the wrong way. So the next three slides, I'm going to outline some of the current challenges facing the watershed. We have limited water supply, extremely limited upstream storage capacity, and the river is fully appropriated. The Carson River and a number of its tributaries including Clear Creek, are listed by the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection as on the Clean Water Act's 303D list of impaired waters. There have been hydrologic modifications to the river, and erosion of the soils and river banks are also a serious.
Reviewed the document. They had their attorney review it, and they made suggested comments. The district attorney here reviewed and approved the comments that were suggested, and therefore the late material is those changes.
Thank you, Kim. Discussion.
Kim, is the sheriff okay with this? Or sheriff, are you okay with this? Okay.
Kim, I had the same questions I originally did on the other one, but you answered the questions already by saying it was out to bid by 10 firms and so forth. Right. So I appreciate that. And thank you.
Kim, who was involved in the interview process? Or
for the record, Marina Works. I was involved, our health officer, Dr. Pintar, and then Dr. O'Shaughnessy, who's the medical director for our medical services in the jail. We all three did the interviews.
Going through the biography and the application for Diamond Pharmacy, I mean, these guys are impressive. It's a family-run business.
It is.
How many locations? Like 50,000 locations?
Quite a few. And they do a lot of jails. In fact, they do the center down in Las Vegas, so we had called them. We called all their references as well, and they came with very high references. And they give us access to a pharmacist 24 hours a day. So with any questions, anybody can call from the jail. They're going to give the deputies training not only in dispensing medications, but how they can access a pharmacist if they need to after hours. So I think they have a very comprehensive service.
And if the amount towards the end of the year gets over the $75,000, does that come back to the board for an augmentation, or how does that work?
Exactly. We'd have to come back and augment it.
It'll be okay. An amendment to the contract. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Any public comment on this issue? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to approve contract 1213-116 for Carson City Jail Pharmaceuticals in the amount of $75,000 to Diamond Pharmacy Services to be funded from the Public Assistance Inmate Medical Care Accounts for fiscal year 2013-2014.
Discussion on the motion. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 18, City Manager, are you going to give the introductions?
Actually, I'm just going to introduce Ed James, Madam Mayor, and have Ed kind of run us through the what's been going on in the Carson City watershed, Carson River watershed.
Good morning. For the record, Ed James with the Carson Water Subconservancy, and with me today is Brenda Hunt. She is the watershed coordinator. And what we're going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Brenda. She's going to talk about some of the challenges and issues that have been going on in the watershed. Also a little background, because a lot of the stuff we are doing has been built over the years. There is action taken by the different counties, even by this board, which you may or may not be aware of, some of the direction that we are working on. And then I'll talk about two projects that we're currently working on in this area that will directly affect Carson City. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Brenda.
Good morning, supervisors, members of the staff, and the public. I'm Brenda Hunt. I'm the Watershed Coordinator and the Carson River Coalition Coordinator for the Carson Water Subconservancy District. Okay. So this is the Carson River Watershed. It begins up in the High Sierra of Alpine County, California. The river travels 184 miles to the Carson Sink in Churchill County, Nevada. It's nearly 4,000 square miles in size, and over 85% of it is federally owned lands. The watershed encompasses the six counties listed here, including Carson City. Oops, sorry, I went the wrong way. So the next three slides, I'm going to outline some of the current challenges facing the watershed. We have limited water supply, extremely limited upstream storage capacity, and the river is fully appropriated. The Carson River and a number of its tributaries including Clear Creek, are listed by the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection as on the Clean Water Act's 303D list of impaired waters. There have been hydrologic modifications to the river, and erosion of the soils and river banks are also a serious problems. Historic mining continues to impact the river, and there are two Superfund sites, one in California called Leviathan Mine, and the Carson River Mercury site, which starts right here in Carson City and is all the way down to the Carson Sink. Other ecological issues include invasive weeds and a host of other aquatic species, including the quagga mussel threat at Lahontan Reservoir, and most recently the New Zealand mud snail has been found on the Truckee River. It hasn't been found, as we know, on the Carson City or Carson River to date, but because they're connected by the Truckee Canal, there's concerns there. Flood awareness, or the lack thereof, the loss of our critical floodplains to development, urban runoff, construction, and urban development, recreational use and access to the river, and, of course, limited funding to implement projects, and the need to increase our awareness and educate our watershed citizens are also some of the challenges facing us. These challenges impact watershed ecological functions, our social fabric, and the economic vitality of the area. And it's for these reasons that an integrated watershed planning process was established. After the 1997 flood, the Carson Water Subconservancy District was asked to take on the integrated watershed management approach, and the Carson River Coalition was formed. The CRC, as it's known, is a watershed-wide stakeholder group comprising of over 150 organizations. It meets once or twice a year, the large portion of it, and then smaller working groups meet much more regularly. Those include the River Corridor Working Group, Education and Outreach Working Group, Water Quality. We have an Invasive Species Working Group, and we can create others as needed for particular issues. The CRC acts as a steering committee for the integrated watershed management process. So these are just to show you kind of the myriad of folks that are involved in the Carson River Coalition.
So in 1998, the CRC developed a vision for the Carson River Basin. The vision is to achieve healthy, sustainable watersheds within the entire Carson River Basin, to achieve improved watershed conditions, so all lands and waterways, including surface and underground, safely receive, store, and release clean water for the good of all peoples, environments, and the natural resources of the Carson River Basin. To achieve this vision through community-led and private-public partnerships for the implementation of local and basin-wide plans and projects. This vision was adopted by all the counties that the river runs through in the watershed, including Carson City. So to achieve the vision, the CRC developed 11 guiding principles, which I will go through in the next few slides. I believe the supervisors, you've been given a copy of the vision and the guiding principles, and there are more on the back table for those who are interested. Basically, these 11 principles are the rules to live by, and they address the issues that are outlined. They were also adopted by all five counties along the Carson River and over 30 organizations throughout the watershed. So just some of the main ones. I won't go through them all since you have them. But number one was to manage the water resources for the economic sustainability, quality of life, and protection of private and public property rights. And like I said, I won't go through them all, but it basically to maintain the riverine and alluvial fan floodplains of the Carson River watershed to accommodate for any sort of flooding events, to protect open space and floodplains. It goes on. The vision and the principles led to the development of two watershed level. Here's the next one. Sorry, there's the 11. These vision and principles led to the development of two watershed level plans, the regional stewardship plan and the regional floodplain management plan. Problems. Historic mining continues to impact the river, and there are two Superfund sites, one in California called Leviathan Mine and the Carson River Mercury site, which starts right here in Carson City and is all the way down to the Carson Sink. Other ecological issues include invasive weeds and a host of other aquatic species, including the quagga mussel threat at Lahontan Reservoir, and most recently the New Zealand mud snail has been found on the Truckee River. It hasn't been found, as we know, on the Carson City or Carson River to date, but because they're connected by the Truckee Canal, there's concerns there. Flood awareness, or the lack thereof, the loss of our critical floodplains to development, urban runoff, construction, and urban development, recreational use and access to the river, and, of course, limited funding to implement projects and the need to increase our awareness and educate our watershed citizens are also some of the challenges facing us. These challenges impact watershed ecological functions, our social fabric, and the economic vitality of the area. And it's for these reasons that an integrated watershed planning process was established. After the 1997 flood, the Carson Water Subconservancy District was asked to take on the integrated watershed management approach, and the Carson River Coalition was formed. The CRC, as it's known, is a watershed-wide stakeholder group comprising of over 150 organizations. It meets once or twice a year, the large portion of it, and then smaller working groups meet much more regularly. Those include the River Corridor Working Group, Education and Outreach Working Group, Water Quality. We have an Invasive Species Working Group, and we can create others as needed for particular issues. The CRC acts as a steering committee for the integrated watershed management process. So these are just to show you kind of the myriad of folks that are involved in the Carson River Coalition. So in 1998, the CRC developed a vision for the Carson River Basin. The vision is to achieve healthy, sustainable watersheds within the entire Carson River Basin, to achieve improved watershed conditions, so all lands and waterways, including surface and underground, safely receive, store, and release clean water for the good of all peoples, environments, and the natural resources of the Carson River Basin. To achieve this vision through community-led and private-public partnerships for the implementation of local and basin-wide plans and projects. This vision was adopted by all the counties that the river runs through in the watershed, including Carson City. So to achieve the vision, the CRC developed 11 guiding principles, which I will go through in the next few slides. I believe the supervisors, you've been given a copy of the vision and the guiding principles, and there are more on the back table for those who are interested. Basically, these 11 principles are the rules to live by, and they address the issues that are outlined. They were also adopted by all five counties along the Carson River and over 30 organizations throughout the watershed. So just some of the main ones. I won't go through them all since you have them. But number one was to manage the water resources for the economic sustainability, quality of life, and protection of private and public property rights. And like I said, I won't go through them all, but it basically to maintain the riverine and alluvial fan floodplains of the Carson River watershed to accommodate for any sort of flooding events, to protect open space and floodplains. It goes on. The vision and the principles led to the development of two watershed level. Here's the next one. Sorry, there's the 11. These vision and principles led to the development of two watershed level plans, the regional stewardship plan and the regional floodplain management plan. So these effective planning measures help us to meet our responsibilities under the Clean Water Act. The stewardship plan was completed in 2006 and contains the 9 elements necessary to meet the Environmental Protection Agency's, that's the federal agency's, criteria to receive 319H funding. This is non-point source funding through the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection and is key to helping implement the goals of the plan. It also funds and supports my coordinator role and several of our other programs, including our environmental education program and our conservation tours programs. Over 30 organizations, including all federal, state, and local entities, environmental groups, private citizens, and local tribes, participated in helping put the plan together. It was adopted by the Washoe Tribe, the Carson Water Subconservancy District Board, and many other organizations. The stewardship plan is broken into project categories. It provides tracking mechanisms for river restoration projects and management measures for all areas of concern. The plan is currently in the process of being updated. The floodplain management plan calls for a regional approach to flooding issues. The plan specifically promotes the living river concept and contains suggested actions, which I will cover in a moment. All five counties along the Carson River officially adopted this plan, which also is in the process of being updated. So back to the stewardship plan, the key project areas outlined in this plan link the guiding principles to strategies that address the number of challenges that were described earlier. These include river restoration stabilization, water quantity issues, recreation use and management, et cetera. The plan, tracks projects and programs that entities such as Carson City and other CRC members throughout the watershed are completing. The Regional Floodplain Management Plan was born during the CRC's 2004 conference and was created mainly with the help of CRC's River Corridor Working Group. The plan's main aim is to reduce flooding hazard and loss of property by protecting the river's floodplains. The plan also consists or assists Carson City residents in that it helps the city in its FEMA community rating system scoring for flood insurance purposes. So we are lucky here on the Carson River that we still have natural floodplains to protect. Carson City has done a stellar job in ensuring the protection of the river's floodplains in your area. The plan promotes the image on the right and hopes to avoid merely a water conveyance facility such as the LA River, as shown on the left. So briefly, the implementation of the Regional Floodplain Management Plan is guided by the following suggested actions. It includes protection of floodplain natural functions and values, higher regulatory standards, flood data information, management, et cetera. I'm going to turn it over here back to Ed, who's going to provide you a further update on some of the key categories in relation to the flood data and information management.
Again, for the record, Ed James with the Carson Water Subconservancy. I'm going to go over two projects with you we're currently working on. One is dealing with flooding, and one is dealing with drought. I like to hedge my bets when people ask me about water, so I'm covering all the bases here. So, but really, again, talking about the remapping of the floodplain. The original floodplains that were mapped in Carson Watershed were done back in the 80s. And a lot has changed since then, and even the technology and how they did it has changed. So we are looking at trying to update it because our flood protection is really our floodplains. If you look at the flood of 97, the damage that occurred over here versus what happened in Reno, we were a hundredth of the cost of the impacts that they had in Reno. And the reason was because they built right next to the river. And every time you build next to the river, people want to get closer and closer, and then, of course, your facilities don't work as what you thought it was. Engineers are fallible, and when that happens, you end up these things. I know, it's every once in a while. So we try to, you know, protect ourselves.
So these effective planning measures help us to meet our responsibilities under the Clean Water Act. The stewardship plan was completed in 2006 and contains the 9 elements necessary to meet the Environmental Protection Agency's, that's the federal agency's, criteria to receive 319H funding. This is non-point source funding through the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection and is key to helping implement the goals of the plan. It also funds and supports my coordinator role and several of our other programs, including our environmental education program and our conservation tours programs. Over 30 organizations, including all federal, state, and local entities, environmental groups, private citizens, and local tribes, participated in helping put the plan together. It was adopted by the Washoe Tribe, the Carson Water Subconservancy District Board, and many other organizations. The stewardship plan is broken into project categories. It provides tracking mechanisms for river restoration projects and management measures for all areas of concern. The plan is currently in the process of being updated. The floodplain management plan calls for a regional approach to flooding issues. The plan specifically promotes the living river concept and contains suggested actions, which I will cover in a moment. All 5 counties along the Carson River officially adopted this plan, which also is in the process of being updated. So back to the stewardship plan, the key project areas outlined in this plan link the guiding principles to strategies that address the number of challenges that were described earlier. These include river restoration stabilization, water quantity issues, recreation use and management, et cetera. The plan, tracks projects and programs that entities such as Carson City and other CRC members throughout the watershed are completing. The Regional Floodplain Management Plan was born during the CRC's 2004 conference and was created mainly with the help of CRC's River Corridor Working Group. The plan's main aim is to reduce flooding hazard and loss of property by protecting the river's floodplains. The plan also consists or assists Carson City residents in that it helps the city in its FEMA community rating system scoring for flood insurance purposes. So we are lucky here on the Carson River that we still have natural floodplains to protect. The Carson City has done a stellar job in ensuring the protection of the river's floodplains in your area. The plan promotes the image on the right and hopes to avoid merely a water conveyance facility such as the LA River, as shown on the left. So briefly, the implementation of the Regional Floodplain Management Plan is guided by the following suggested actions. It includes protection of floodplain natural functions and values, higher regulatory standards, flood data information, management, et cetera. I'm going to turn it over here back to Ed, who's going to provide you a further update on some of the key categories in relation to the flood data and information management.
Again, for the record, Ed James with the Carson Water Subconservancy. I'm going to go over two projects with you where we're currently working on. One is dealing with flooding, and one is dealing with drought. I like to hedge my bets when people ask me about water, so I'm covering all the bases here. So, but really, again, talking about the remapping of the floodplain. The original floodplains that were mapped in Carson Watershed were done back in the 80s. And a lot has changed since then, and even the technology and how they did it has changed. So we are looking at trying to update it, because our flood protection is really our floodplains. If you look at the flood of 97, the damage that occurred over here versus what happened in Reno, we were a hundredth of the cost of the impacts that they had in Reno. And the reason was because they built right next to the river. And every time you build next to the river, people want to get closer and closer, and then, of course, your facilities don't work is what you thought it was. Engineers are fallible, and when that happens, you end these things. I know, it's every once in a while. So we try to, you know, protect ourselves the best manner we can. So the objective on this remapping of the floodplain is we're going actually from Alpine County all the way down to Lahontan Reservoir. And what we're doing is we're using a new technology and technique that FEMA is just starting to embrace. In fact, we're one of the first in the nation that's doing this. And it's using a holistic approach for the whole watershed. In fact, you may recall a year ago you guys signed on to the charter with FEMA. We are the first one in Region 9 to sign on. I think there's only two other in the United States that have signed on these charters. And again, that talks about working at a local level, dealing with flooding with FEMA as a partner. And it's kind of a new approach for FEMA. This project is being funded by FEMA. I should say on a side note, FEMA is still trying to learn what a partnership means, but we're trying to educate them as we go. So, the other aspect of this is using an unsteady state flow model. Now, unsteady state versus steady state is critical here, because the old models were basically based on a steady state. That meant that the flow that started up at the top of the watershed moved at a steady flow and rate. In reality, we know that the flows coming to like Carson Valley spread out, and so the volumes do change, and we have huge volumes that the water can flow into. So we wanted to go with unsteady state to take a look at that, because that does modify how your flows and the flow patterns move through the system. It basically looks at time and flow through the area. We're also calibrating it to the 97 flow. What was nice is there were a lot of pictures taken in 97, and so we do this modeling. We can actually go and look and say, okay, our model says this is where the flow should have been. We look at the flow in 97. Does that correlate? And we did this already in Lyon County. It looked really good. We're currently doing this in Carson City, and we'll be eventually doing this in Douglas County. I should point out that a lot of people think the 97 flood was a 100-year flood event. It was not. It was closer to probably 89. So floods can be larger than what we saw in 97. And we know that when we talk about 1%, 1 in 100 chance of flooding, it's just a FEMA standard. We can be having a lot bigger floods in the future, and we should always be aware of that. So I want to talk a little about this unsteady flow, because it does talk about change, and really want to focus that our biggest protection in flooding is this floodplain, what Mother Nature gives us, and that's what we want to do, keep that area that's open to flood. We did a study, the consultant just looking at if we were to encroach on the flood area and from the prison down through Carson City, that we would see the peak flow come 3 hours earlier than it does historically, and it would rise a couple inches. Now, a couple inches doesn't sound like a lot, but when you start looking at the impacts that could be on the area, it's significant. And that's just a very small area. So what we're trying to do is protect those floodplains. And what's nice with this unsteady state model, it looks at the encroachment of more development. And we will be able to update this model as we go through. So as you have development going through, we will be able to run this model again and see what the impacts are down to the system. And again, that's a nice thing about the encroachment and impacts of the areas. We will also be developing a floodway, and this is a critical element, part of FEMA. And basically, a floodway is a technology or a term that FEMA uses, which allows encroachment in the floodplain. And what this shows here basically is that originally you had your flood area that was through here, and this is where the water would flow. And when it was bank full, the water level would be here. Now, over the years, you're seeing encroachment. People build on the floodplain. What happens is when that occurs, the water level goes up. And when it goes up 1 foot, this is FEMA's standard here, that's your floodway. You cannot allow it to go up greater than 1 foot. And so this is what we're trying to achieve. So as encroachment comes around, we are trying to ensure that this does not rise more than 1 foot. Now, in Douglas County, they have a more stricter standard. They look at 0.1 foot. I think with Carson City, we're now currently with the modeling look at, I think it's 0.99, but we're looking at modeling at 0.7. And in Lyon County, we're looking at 0.7. The reason why we're doing that is we already know that there's been some encroachment occurring. So the floodplains have changed a bit, and we're just trying to make sure the mapping fits. What's nice, though, in the future is when you have this model done, when a developer comes in, here he knows what's going to happen if he's working in the floodplain. Here he has a model. He doesn't have to hire an engineer to go out and redo this. He has a model that is available that the city or counties would give that person. They would put their development on it. They would run it the best manner we can. So the objective on this remapping of the floodplain is we're going actually from Alpine County all the way down to Lahontan Reservoir. And what we're doing is we're using a new technology and technique that FEMA is just starting to embrace. In fact, we're one of the first in the nation that's doing this. And it's using a holistic approach for the whole watershed. In fact, you may recall a year ago, you guys signed on to the charter with FEMA. We are the first one in Region 9 to sign on. I think there's only two other in the United States that have signed on these charters. And again, that talks about working at a local level, dealing with flooding with FEMA as a partner. And it's kind of a new approach for FEMA. This project is being funded by FEMA. I should say on a side note, FEMA is still trying to learn what a partnership means, but we're trying to educate them as we go. So, the other aspect of this is using an unsteady state flow model. Now, unsteady state versus steady state is critical here because the old models were basically based on a steady state. That meant that the flow that started up at the top of the watershed moved at a steady flow and rate. In reality, we know that the flow is coming like Carson Valley, spread out. And so the volumes do change. And we have huge volumes that the water can flow into. So we wanted to go with unsteady state to take a look at that because that does modify how your flows and the flow patterns move through the system. It basically looks at time and flow through the area. We're also calibrating it to the 97 flow. What was nice is there's a lot of pictures taken in the 97. And so we do this modeling, we can actually go and look and say, okay, our model says this is where the flow should have been. We look at the flow in 97. Does that correlate? And we did this already in Lyon County. It looked really good. We're currently doing this in Carson City, and we'll be eventually doing this in Douglas County. I should point out that a lot of people think the 97 flood was a 100-year flood event. It was not. It was closer to probably 89. So floods can be larger than what we saw in 97. And we know that when we talk about 1%, 1 in 100 chance of flooding, it's just a FEMA standard. We can be having a lot bigger floods in the future, and we should always be aware of that. So I want to talk a little about this unsteady flow because it does talk about change. And really want to focus that our biggest protection in flooding is this floodplain, what Mother Nature gives us. And that's what we want to do, keep that area that's open to flood. We did a study, the consultant just looking at if we were to encroach on the flood area and from the prison down through Carson City, that we would see the peak flow come 3 hours earlier than it does historically, and it would rise a couple inches. Now, a couple inches doesn't sound like a lot, but when you start looking at the impacts that could be on the area, it's significant. And that's just a very small area. So what we're trying to do is protect those floodplains. And what's nice with this unsteady state model, it looks at the encroachment of more development. And we will be able to update this model as we go through. So as you have development going through, we will be able to run this model again and see what the impacts are down to the system. And again, that's a nice thing about the encroachment and impacts of the areas. We will also be developing a floodway, and this is a critical element, part of the FEMA. And basically, the floodway is a technology or a term that FEMA uses, which allows encroachment in the floodplain. And what this shows here basically is that originally you had your flood area that was through here, and this is where the water would flow. And when it was bank full, the water level would be here. Now, over the years, you're seeing encroachment. People build on the floodplain. What happens is when that occurs, the water level goes up. And when it goes up 1 foot, this is FEMA's standard here, that's your floodway. You cannot allow it to go up greater than 1 foot. And so this is what we're trying to achieve. So as encroachment comes around, we are trying to ensure that this does not rise more than 1 foot. Now, in Douglas County, they have a more stricter standard. They look at 0.1 foot. I think with Carson City, we're now currently with the modeling look at, I think it's 0.99, but we're looking at modeling at 0.7. And in Lyon County, we're looking at 0.7. The reason why we're doing that is we already know that there's been some encroachment occurring. So the floodplains have changed a bit, and we're just trying to make sure the mapping fits. What's nice, though, in the future is when you have this model done, when a developer comes in, here he knows what's going to happen if he's working in the floodplain. Here he has a model. He doesn't have to hire an engineer to go out and redo this. He has a model that is available that the city or counties would give that person. They would put their development on it. They would run it. We would know what the impact. Your staff would know. And then periodically, the subconservancy would take all the data from throughout the entire watershed and update the model. So, again, everyone's working on a constant new model. So it keeps current the data we have, and this is something we have not had in the past. Every time someone comes in today, they just model their little reach. And, of course, a lot of times you can show there's no impacts, but we know that it's like a bathtub. You start putting one rock in it, you don't notice it, put two rocks. But after a while, you start putting a dozen in there, you start overflowing the bathtub. And that's what we know happens. So, and this is kind of what we'll see with the mapping. This is in Lyon County, the Dayton area. The outer lines is the 100-year floodplain, and the inner one is the floodway. Because it's such a fairly steep area coming out, you can see that the floodway and the floodplain are fairly consistent. Right here, they're right on top of each other. Carson City, I would assume when we go through that, we haven't finished the mapping, will be close to the same. But when you get into Douglas County, you're going to see quite a bit of difference because it just spreads out so much more. So, again, we're going to be looking at that. And we're hoping to have this project done in the next 2.5 years. It's been dependent upon funding from FEMA, and FEMA has been giving us incremental fundings over the last couple years. The other item I want to talk about is this comprehensive regional water management plan. And what this plan is doing is looking at our water supply for the next 30 to 40 years. And we're focusing on the municipalities, but one of the things that the subconservancy does is that we are not a municipality, we're not an environmental group, we're not an ag group. But we understand the interaction between all these and the importance of those. So when we start putting these plans together, we also look at what does this also mean to the environment? What does it mean to our ag community? How do we handle all these demands on the river system? So we are looking at this regional system, looking at where our water supply is going to be. Also, what is the potential impact of climate change? This is, again, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but we ought to be planning for it. What if things happen? I do have some data I'll show later on of some of the changes we're already seeing in our watershed. Developing a regional water conservation plan. Every community does a good job on water conservation. Some do better than others. Carson City have a very aggressive water conservation plan, which is probably the best one in the watershed. But you can always do better. And this idea is to develop this regional water conservation plan, that we will not to change what you're doing, but hopefully enhance what is currently being done in the area. One of the things that we're going to promote is watering schedule. We have 11 different water purveyors up and down this watershed, and they all have different water schedules on when you can and when you can't water. It's confusing for the community because a lot of times people don't even know where they get their water from, and then they hear one entity says this, another one says this. So we're going to be working with all the water purveyors trying to have a little more uniformed water scheduling so the community is not confused when they get their when they hear these plans and when they can and cannot water. Again, we're looking at the water supply and demands. If there's shortfalls, how are we going to be able to meet those shortfalls in the future with the water supply? And then linking regional systems. That is a critical element that we see that's the most cost-effective manner. Currently, you currently do that. You have a pipeline that goes from Carson to Lyon County. It's been a great program back and forth. Water moves back to Carson City or to Lyon County, and it benefits both communities in a very cost-effective manner. You're currently working on an agreement to bring water from Minden all the way up to Carson City. That should be constructed, I think, next year. Again, it offsets some of the water you've lost due to new water quality standards and uranium impact. So, again, it benefits the community. It's a cheaper source, and it's going to be there over the long term. There's still costs associated with it, and people have to understand. But if you look at your alternatives, this was definitely the most cost-effective, not only for Carson City residents, but for North Douglas County, Indian Hills, and then for the town of Minden. So these are things that we're looking at in this plan, and once we complete it, we'll be bringing back an update to you at that time. Wanted to show you some of the things that we've seen, especially with the work on the climate change, because there's always an impact on what's happening. And what's interesting is you see here, we did a comparison of the flow data. What's nice is we have a lot of historic data on the Carson. But we went comparing 41 to 74 to compare it to 75 to 2009. And this was done by DRI, looking at the impacts. And what we see as you start going all this is that in March, we are now seeing, we know what the impact, your staff would know, and then periodically the subconservancy would take all the data from throughout the entire watershed and update the model. So again, everyone's working on a constant new model. So it keeps current, the data we have, and this is something we have not had in the past. Every time someone comes in today, they just model their little reach. And of course, a lot of times you can show there's no impacts, but we know that it's like a bathtub. You start putting one rock in and you don't notice it, put two rocks. But after a while, you start putting a dozen in there, you start overflowing the bathtub. And that's what we know happens. So, and this is kind of what we'll see with the mapping. This is in Lyon County, the Dayton area. The outer lines is the 100-year floodplain, and the inner one is the floodway. Because it's such a fairly steep area coming out, you can see that the floodway and the floodplain are fairly consistent. Right here, they're right on top of each other. Carson City, I would assume when we go through that, we haven't finished the mapping, will be close to the same. But when you get into Douglas County, you're going to see quite a bit of difference because it just spreads out so much more. So, again, we're going to be looking at that. And we're hoping to have this project done in the next 2.5 years. It's been dependent upon funding from FEMA, and FEMA has been giving us incremental fundings over the last couple of years. The other item I want to talk about is this comprehensive regional water management plan. And what this plan is doing is looking at our water supply for the next 30 to 40 years. And we're focusing on the municipalities, but one of the things that the subconservancy does is that we are not a municipality, we're not an environmental group, we're not an ag group, but we understand the interaction between all these and the importance of those. So when we start putting these plans together, we also look at what does this also mean to the environment? What does it mean to our ag community? How do we handle all these demands on the river system? So we are looking at this regional system, looking at where our water supply is going to be, also what is potential impact of climate change. This is, again, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but we ought to be planning for it. What if things happen? I do have some data I'll show later on of some of the changes we're already seeing in our watershed. Developing a regional water conservation plan. Every community does a good job on water conservation. Some do better than others. Carson City have a very aggressive water conservation plan, which is probably the best one in the watershed. But you can always do better. And this idea is to develop this regional water conservation plan that we will not to change what you're doing, but hopefully enhance what is currently being done in the area. One of the things that we're going to promote is watering schedule. We have 11 different water purveyors up and down this watershed, and they all have different water schedules on when you can and when you can't water. It's confusing for the community because a lot of times people don't even know where they get their water from, and then they hear one entity says this, another one says this. So we're going to be working with all the water purveyors trying to have a little more uniformed water scheduling so the community is not confused when they get their when they hear these plans and when they can and cannot water. Again, we're looking at the water supply and demands. If there's shortfalls, how are we going to be able to meet those shortfalls in the future with the water supply? And then linking regional systems. That is a critical element that we see that's the most cost-effective manner. Currently, you currently do that. You have a pipeline that goes from Carson to Lyon County. It's been a great program back and forth. Water moves back to Carson City or to Lyon County, and it benefits both communities in a very cost-effective manner. You're currently working on an agreement to bring water from Minden all the way up to Carson City. That should be constructed, I think, next year. Again, it offsets some of the water you've lost due to new water quality standards and uranium impact. So, again, it benefits the community. It's a cheaper source, and it's going to be there over the long term. There's still costs associated with it, and people have to understand. But if you look at your alternatives, this was definitely the most cost-effective, not only for Carson City residents, but for North Douglas County, Indian Hills, and then for town of Minden. So these are things that we're looking at in this plan, and when we complete it, we'll be bringing back an update to you at that time. Wanted to show you some of the things that we've seen, especially with the work on the climate change, because there's always an impact on what's happening. And what's interesting is you see here, we did a comparison of the flow data. What's nice is we have a lot of historic data on the Carson. But we went comparing 41 to 74 to compare it to 75 to 2009. And this was done by DRI, looking at the impacts. And what we see as you start going all this is that in March, we are now seeing a little more flow occurring in March than we did historically, that there is a shift occurring. And we actually have temperature data and all that that shows that this is occurring. Things are getting warmer. Our lows are not as low as they used to be. And so we're seeing this. And if this trend continues, we are going to see, again, more water coming off in the springtime. Well, what does that mean to the watershed? Well, since we have very limited upstream storage, our biggest storage is Mother Nature. If it comes off quicker, it's going to have an impact to our ag communities because they will not be able to take as much. Because it's, if it's there in March, growing season hasn't started, the plants can't use it, it's going to go by. The other thing is you can start seeing that June also is drier. And so we're seeing a shift in that. So we're going to have less water in the summertime. Now, what's interesting is statistically, July, August, and September didn't really change much. And I kind of scratched my head. I mean, how can we see it in June and not July and August? And it finally occurred to me the reason is because we never have water in July and August. So it's always dry, so it doesn't really matter. But our Junes will be drier. Now, for Carson City, this could be an impact because you have some induction wells. You have some of the most senior water rights on the river that you can take in these induction wells for your supply. The problem is if the river goes dry, I don't care how senior your water right is, you can't take the water. So there are some issues that you're going to have to deal with over the future. And again, if these trends continue, it may be a bigger impact on that. So these are some of the things we're looking at. How is that going to tie in together and looking at the whole watershed? Your staff does a great job dealing with Carson City. I'm not trying to tell them what to do because I'm not an expert in that. But my job is to look at the entire watershed as a whole and see if there's that linkage that works better for everyone. So that is our goal when we do this, and that's why I'm going out here, because when we take off on this, we want to make sure that everyone's on board. We're not leaving anyone behind or outside on that. So with that, I'm here to answer any questions or if you have any questions for Brenda, again, what we're trying to do here.
Ed, thank you for that. I do have a couple of questions. Sure. One, first of all, your FEMA, the tool that you're working with FEMA is excellent. Right. That's fabulous. Secondly, and I know we brought this up at our workshop, is the Water Subconservancy working toward any sort of storage efforts, considering that we're experiencing runoff sooner? I mean, is there any effort in that direction at this point?
We are looking at opportunities there. What you're probably not going to see, and I have some experience working for other places in the country, I don't see a large dam going down the main fork of the river. Those are just the environmental impacts alone are just huge. But off-stream storage could be an opportunity. Underground storage may be an opportunity. We're going to have to look at that. We are currently talking with the Bureau of Reclamation of doing a very more detailed analysis on it. One of the things we don't have is a good model of the river. We know what the hydrology is through the flow, but we don't know is how does irrigation diversions impact year to year on the flow of the river. We need to have that working tool, and once we have that, we can really start developing, okay, how we want to do this. Can we take a water right, put it over here at this period of time? We're looking at in-stream storage, in-stream flows, how to enhance that through Douglas County. There's a lot of things we're doing in this planning process, but without some of these tools, it's more of a guess. They just completed a project like this on the Colorado River, and it's well, the results weren't happy because they realized they were in the world of hurt of water supply and the demands, but they have a tool to be able to do this, and that's what we're going to be working on. So, yes, we're looking at that. We're just a couple years out before we can have something in place.
And then secondly, Ed, because this was a drier year, what's our water outlook for this year?
It's easy to predict now. It's going to be very dry. The river is already dropping, and you're seeing that. I would say the river will probably go dry through Carson City like it did last year. Agriculture is probably going to start getting cut off, regulated in the next week or two. Last year, we actually had a very good coming out of a very wet year. This year, we're not. And so we're seeing some impacts, like Lahontan Reservoir is down. It only got up to about 125,000 in storage, and it's been dropping. We expect probably in mid-July that they will be cut off, and they won't be able to release any more out of Lahontan. So that's some of the planning that they're looking at. Another source you have is Marlette Lake. Last year, this time, Marlette Lake was spilling. So you were able to take a little more flow occurring in March than we did historically, that there is a shift occurring. And we actually have temperature data and all that that shows that this is occurring. Things are getting warmer. Our lows are not as low as they used to be. And so we're seeing this. And if this trend continues, we are going to see, again, more water coming off in the springtime. Well, what does that mean to the watershed? Well, since we have very limited upstream storage, our biggest storage is Mother Nature. If it comes off quicker, it's going to have an impact to our ag communities because they will not be able to take as much because if it's there in March, growing season hasn't started, the plants can't use it, it's going to go by. The other thing is you can start seeing that June also is drier. And so we're seeing a shift in that. So we're going to have less water in the summertime. Now, what's interesting is statistically, July, August, and September didn't really change much. And I kind of scratched my head. I mean, how can we see it in June and not July and August? And it finally occurred to me the reason is because we never have water in July and August. So it's always dry, so it doesn't really matter. But our Junes will be drier. Now, for Carson City, this could be an impact because you have some induction wells. You have some of the most senior water rights on the river that you can take in these induction wells for your supply. The problem is if the river goes dry, I don't care how senior your water right is, you can't take the water. So there are some issues that you're going to have to deal with over the future. And again, if these trends continue, it may be a bigger impact on that. So these are some of the things we're looking at. How is that going to tie in together and looking at the whole watershed? Your staff does a great job dealing with Carson City. I'm not trying to tell them what to do because I'm not an expert in that. But my job is to look at the entire watershed as a whole and see if there's that linkage that works better for everyone. So that is our goal when we do this, and that's why I'm going out here, because when we take off on this, we want to make sure that everyone's on board. We're not leaving anyone behind or outside on that. So with that, I'm here to answer any questions or if you have any questions for Brenda, again, what we're trying to do here.
Ed, thank you for that. I do have a couple of questions. Sure. One, first of all, your FEMA, the tool that you're working with FEMA is excellent. Right. That's fabulous. Secondly, and I know we brought this up at our workshop, is the Water Subconservancy working toward any sort of storage efforts, considering that we're experiencing runoff sooner I mean, is there any effort in that direction at this point?
We are looking at opportunities there. What you're probably not going to see, and I have some of my experience working for other places in the country, I don't see a large dam going down the main fork of the river. Those are just the environmental impacts alone are just huge. But off-stream storage could be an opportunity. Underground storage may be an opportunity. We are going to have to look at that. We are currently talking with the Bureau of Reclamation of doing a very more detailed analysis on it. One of the things we don't have is a good model of the river. We know what the hydrology is through the flow, but we don't know is how does irrigation diversions impact year to year on the flow of the river. We need to have that working tool, and once we have that, we can really start developing, okay, how we want to do this. Can we take a water right, put it over here at this period of time? We're looking at in-stream storage, in-stream flows, how to enhance that through Douglas County. There's a lot of things we're doing in this planning process, but without some of these tools, it's more of a guess. They just completed a project like this on the Colorado River, and it's well, the results weren't happy because they realized they were in the world of hurt of water supply and demands, but they have a tool to be able to do this, and that's what we're going to be working on. So, yes, we're looking at that. We're just a couple years out before we can have something in place.
And then secondly, Ed, because this was a drier year, what's our water outlook for this year?
It's easy to predict now. It's going to be very dry. The river is already dropping, and you're seeing that. I would say the river will probably go dry through Carson City like it did last year. Agriculture is probably going to start getting cut off, regulated in the next week or two. Last year, we actually had a very good, coming out of a very wet year. This year, we're not. And so we're seeing some impacts, like Lahontan Reservoir is down. It only got up to about 125,000 in storage, and it's been dropping. We expect probably in mid-July that they will be cut off, and they won't be able to release any more out of Lahontan. So that's some of the planning that they're looking at. Another source you have is Marlette Lake. Last year, this time, Marlette Lake was spilling. So you were able to take water out of that. This year, it was spilling very little, and it stopped spilling and is now evaporating away. So you won't have the resources coming out of Marlette like you did last year. So, again, your base flow is going to be a little different. So there are some things that I'm sure your staff is looking at how to meet the demands. I think the good news is that for Carson City and most of the other areas, you should have enough water to meet your demands for the summer. Unless a well or two goes out, then you could have some issues. But I think generally we'll be okay. But, again, agriculture, you're going to see a lot of ranchers. We have a rancher on our board. He'll probably be out of water by mid-June. And basically he has another source of water available to him. And the environment always gets impacted when you have those kind of dry years.
Thank you, Ed. Any other questions from board members? Jim?
Hi, Ed. Two quick questions. Well, I don't know if they're quick, I guess. But the future regional infrastructural needs, what that essentially may be and the cost ramifications down the line, if you could elaborate a little bit on that. And the second question is, I've been contacted by a group here locally, and they want to know, will the Carson River ever become what the Truckee River is in Reno with the canoeing and the accessibility on that level? Could that ever happen here on the Carson River? Those okay. are my two questions. Thank
two
you.
Two good questions. On the first one, we have asked a consultant to think outside the box on regionalization, on connections. And so when that report is done, which the draft should be out in the next couple of weeks that your staff will look at, looking at different ways that we can tie systems together. We will have a rough idea of the cost, but really it's more regionally kind of where we're going to be wanting to go. This regional pipeline that's currently being built, we identified that need back in 2002, but it just took a while to, you know, say, where do you want to go? What forced that pipeline to go through was basically the arsenic standards changing, and Ellison, everyone would either going to have to build their own arsenic treatment plant, which became very expensive, and also the uranium issue that you had in your water. So those things trying to drive those economic issues there. So we'll be looking at all these different connections. And, again, what you're trying to do is making sure that these regionalizations are more cost-effective than the alternative of just doing it on your own. And so those will be the comparisons that your staff and others throughout the watershed will always have to look at as go through. Some entities in the lower part of the watershed are running out of water resources. And so, again, how are they going to meet their future demands? And that's some of the things we're going to be looking at on there. We also are looking at a possible underground storage in, like, Stagecoach. That may be a way of taking that springtime water, putting it in the ground, and then pumping the water back out into that community. As for canoeing or recreation on the Carson, the one thing I like to point out on the Truckee, if you look at Lake Tahoe, they have a dam there which is 6 feet. That 6 feet of storage on Lake Tahoe is the equivalent of 2 years of annual runoff on the Carson. So they have a lot more storage on the Truckee that they can do that. We have none of that. We have less than 10,000 acre-feet of storage on the upper Carson. So what Mother Nature gives us is what we can deal with. So you're never going to see those. Now, we do have that recreational. We have the aquatic trails we've worked with Carson City on. But it really depends on what Mother Nature gives us. And this year she didn't give us much. I don't see us ever being able to build enough large enough reservoir in the upper watershed to be able to do that to create year-round recreation on the Carson. And it's just the reality of what we're dealing with. If we were to build a very large reservoir up there, the question I ask is, whose water are we going to store? Since the entire river is fully appropriated, that water in the wintertime and springtime is going down to fill the Lahontan. Now, you could say, well, we could build that, store it up there, and then release it down to the Lahontan again. But you're going to have a lot of issues when you start trying to deal with that kind of recreational impacts. So I don't ever see that ability. But we are going to be looking at trying to do some small things for in-stream flow enhancements. We already currently do that. Subconservancy owns some water rights that we do in the fall to enhance fisheries and stuff like that. But we're always talking much smaller scale than what you'll ever see on the Truckee.
Thank you. Ed, you were talking about floodplain data and encroachment, et cetera. Does the subconservancy mandate to Carson City building codes and where it can build and that sort of thing? Does it mandate anything to Carson City?
Now, the nice thing about it, actually, when you start talking about other agencies, that this year it was spilling very little and has stopped spilling and is now evaporating away, so you won't have the resources coming out of Marlette like you did last year. So, again, your base flow is going to be a little different. So there are some things that I'm sure your staff is looking at how to meet the demands. I think the good news is that for Carson City and most of the other areas, you should have enough water to meet your demands for the summer. Unless a well or two goes out, then you could have some issues. But I think generally we'll be okay. But, again, agriculture, you're going to see a lot of ranchers. We have a rancher on our board. He'll probably be out of water by mid-June. And basically he has no other source of water available to him. And the environment always gets impacted when you have those kind of dry years.
Thank you, Ed. Any other questions from board members? Jim?
Hi, Ed. Two quick questions. Well, I don't know if they're quick, I guess. But the future regional infrastructural needs, what that essentially may be and the cost ramifications down the line, if you could elaborate a little bit on that. And the second question is, I've been contacted by a group here locally, and they want to know, will the Carson River ever become what the Truckee River is in Reno with the canoeing and the accessibility on that level? Could that ever happen here on the Carson River? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Two good questions. On the first one, we have asked a consultant to think outside the box on regionalization, on connections. And so when that report is done, which the draft should be out in the next couple of weeks that your staff will look at, looking at different ways that we can tie systems together. We will have a rough idea of the cost, but really it's more regionally kind of where we're going to be wanting to go. This regional pipeline that's currently being built, we identified that need back in 2002, but it just took a while to, you know, say, where do you want to go? What forced that pipeline to go through was basically the arsenic standards changing, and else and everyone would either going to have to build their own arsenic treatment plant, which became very expensive, and also the uranium issue that you had in your water. So those things trying to drive those economic issues there. So we were looking at all these different connections. And again, what you're trying to do is making sure that these regionalizations are more cost-effective than the alternative of just doing it on your own. And so those will be the comparisons that your staff and others throughout the watershed will always have to look at as we go through. Some entities in the lower part of the watershed are running out of water resources. And so, again, how are they going to meet their future demands? And that's some of the things we're going to be looking at on there. We also are looking at a possible underground storage in, like, Stagecoach. That may be a way of taking that springtime water, putting it in the ground, and then pumping the water back out into that community. As for canoeing or recreation on the Carson, the one thing I like to point out on the Truckee, if you look at Lake Tahoe, they have a dam there which is 6 feet. That 6 feet of storage on Lake Tahoe is the equivalent of 2 years of annual runoff on the Carson. So they have a lot more storage on the Truckee that they can do that. We have none of that. We have less than 10,000 acre-feet of storage on the upper Carson. So what Mother Nature gives us is what we can deal with. So you're never going to see those. Now, we do have that recreational. We have the aquatic trails we've worked with Carson City on. But it really depends on what Mother Nature gives us. And this year she didn't give us much. I don't see us ever being able to build enough large enough reservoir in the upper watershed to be able to do that to create year-round recreation on the Carson. And it's just the reality of what we're dealing with. If we were to build a very large reservoir up there, the question I ask is, whose water are we going to store? Since the entire river is fully appropriated, that water in the wintertime and springtime is going down to fill the Lahontan. Now, you could say, well, we could build that, store it up there, and then release it down to the Lahontan again, but you're going to have a lot of issues when you start trying to deal with that kind of recreational impacts. So I don't ever see that ability. But we are going to be looking at trying to do some small things for in-stream flow enhancements. We already currently do that. Subconservancy owns some water rights that we do in the fall to enhance fisheries and stuff like that. But we're always talking much smaller scale than what you'll ever see on the Truckee.
Thank you. Ed, you were talking about floodplain data and encroachment, et cetera. Does the subconservancy mandate to Carson City building codes and where it can build and that sort of thing? Does it mandate anything to Carson City?
Now, the nice thing about it, actually, when you start talking about other agencies, when we were established by the legislature, on purpose, we were given no regulatory authority because none of the counties wanted another third party, I hate to say TRPA, to come in and tell you how to run your organization. So our role really is to work closely with your staff one-on-one. I tell people my job is to strip away county and state lines, look what's best for the community as a whole, but then we have to come back to you guys because you're the ones to implement it. So you make sure that you're protecting your residents and your community on that. So we are working hand in hand to sell these ideas. We think we have a good vision for it, but ultimately the decision that occurs in Carson City is by the supervisors in Carson City.
I understand you're having a watershed management tour.
Yes.
When is it, if you remember? And
next week, actually, Wednesday and Thursday, if people are interested. We still have room on the bus. And basically what we do is we provide a two-day bus tour of the entire watershed. And the first day, we basically go from Carson City all the way up to Alpine County. We have experts that come on the bus, talk about what's going on. We have videos talking about the issues like Leviathan. You can't get up there, but we have video on what's happening up in Leviathan. The second day, we do the lower Carson. And again, it's a great opportunity for you to really see what's happening on. I think you've had some of your staff members in the past go on it, and supervisor, whatever, if you're interested, it's a great opportunity to really get a better feel of how you're linked together in this watershed. Because what happens in Alpine County does affect those in Churchill County and vice versa. And that river links us all together, and that's why we call it a living river.
And the funding of the subconservancy comes from where?
We get ad valorem taxes, and we also get grants. And we try to leverage those as much as possible. We're kind of a unique organization. A lot of the money usually goes to staff salaries and all that. We're kind of opposite. Most of the money we get into is actually into projects. We try to get it out to really help the community and do a lot of river projects. But that's kind of where it is. We do a lot of matching with our funds to leverage as much as we can because we understand the importance of funding.
So ad valorem taxes means Carson City property taxes.
That is correct.
Okay. And then my last question is for Larry. How is it working with them? Should we keep going? That sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking when Ed was talking about steady state versus unsteady state of the river flow, for example, we attempted in 1976 to try to model the Carson River and were unsuccessful. You know, back working with Manhattan College out of the Bronx, New York, EPA Region 9. I mean, it just the river does not allow itself to be modeled. And so it's been an ongoing thing for 40 years. And, I this is really great to see this kind of resolution come together. And I don't think without the subconservancy working on a regional basis, you would ever get those kinds of tools. So, no, we want to keep going.
Thank you.
Ed, do you think the new modeling tool will help alleviate some of the issues they're having with the FEMA maps in Douglas County? I assume that's one of the ultimate objectives.
Well, it would be. However, we're just focusing on the river corridor itself. A lot of the mapping issues they have is out of the alluvial fans, out of the pine nuts areas, and so they're a different kind of modeling issue. I guess I allude to, you know, FEMA learning how to be a partner. Those are some of the concerns we have with FEMA. We're trying to work with Douglas County on looking at those models again because we have a concern. And the nice thing about what we're doing now compared to what happened there, when they came in there and did those pine nut mappings, basically FEMA came in, hired the consultant, wasn't from a local entity around here, did the mapping and came back and says, here it is. What we're doing now is differently. We've hired a local firm, we're taking the lead, and we're working step by step with the community so we don't have these problems that Douglas County ran into. And that's why, excuse me, we really wanted to start with this, you know, charter effort to basically do it at a local level but meeting FEMA standards versus what FEMA used to do is coming from the top down, and then you're always constantly fighting with FEMA to try to correct those. So in the short answer, no, it won't fix those, but we are working with FEMA to try to make sure that they're aware of that and that we have the best modeling available. We want to get the best information out there, the most accurate information out there, because if you have wrong information, either way, someone may be in the floodplain that shouldn't be or vice versa, people need to be aware. And that's what we're trying to do is at least make people aware of those so then they can make rational decisions.
And then my last question may be for you, Ed. It may be for Larry.
We were established by the legislature. On purpose, we were given no regulatory authority because none of the counties wanted another third party, I hate to say TRPA, to come in and tell you how to run your organization. So our role really is to work closely with your staff one-on-one. I tell people my job is to strip away county and state lines, look what's best for the community as a whole, but then we have to come back to you guys because you're the ones to implement it. So you make sure that you're protecting your residents and your community on that. So we are working hand in hand to sell these ideas. We think we have a good vision for it, but ultimately the decision that occurs in Carson City is by the supervisors in Carson City.
I understand you're having a watershed management tour.
Yes.
When is it, if you remember? And
next week, actually, Wednesday and Thursday, if people are interested, we still have room on the bus. And basically what we do is we provide a two-day bus tour of the entire watershed. And the first day, we basically go from Carson City all the way up to Alpine County. We have experts that come on the bus, talk about what's going on. We have videos talking about the issues like Leviathan. You can't get up there, but we have video on what's happening up in Leviathan. The second day, we do the lower Carson. And again, it's a great opportunity for you to really see what's happening on. I think you've had some of your staff members in the past go on it and supervisor, whatever, if you're interested. It's a great opportunity to really get a better feel of how you're linked together in this watershed. Because what happens in Alpine County does affect those in Churchill County and vice versa. And that river links us all together, and that's why we call it a living river.
And the funding of the subconservancy comes from where?
We get ad valorem taxes, and we also get grants. And we try to leverage those as much as possible. We're kind of a unique organization. A lot of the money usually goes to staff salaries and all that. We're kind of opposite. Most of the money we get into is actually into projects. We try to get it out to really help the community and do a lot of river projects. But that's kind of where it is. We do a lot of matching with our funds to leverage as much as we can because we understand the importance of funding.
So ad valorem taxes means Carson City property taxes.
That is correct.
Okay. And then my last question is for Larry. How is it working with them? Should we keep going? That sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking when Ed was talking about steady state versus unsteady state of the river flow, for example, we attempted in 1976 to try to model the Carson River and were unsuccessful. You know, back working with Manhattan College out of the Bronx, New York, EPA Region 9. I mean, it just the river does not allow itself to be modeled. And so it's been an ongoing thing for 40 years. And, I this is really great to see this kind of resolution come together. And I don't think without the subconservancy working on a regional basis, you would ever get those kinds of tools. So, no, we want to keep going.
Thank you.
Ed, do you think the new modeling tool will help alleviate some of the issues they're having with the FEMA maps in Douglas County? I assume that's one of the ultimate objectives.
Well, it would be. However, we're just focusing on the river corridor itself. A lot of the mapping issues they have is out of the alluvial fans, out of the pine nuts areas, and so they're a different kind of modeling issue. I guess I allude to, you know, FEMA learning how to be a partner. Those are some of the concerns we have with FEMA. We're trying to work with Douglas County on looking at those models again because we have a concern. And the nice thing about what we're doing now compared to what happened there, when they came in there and did those pine nut mappings, basically FEMA came in, hired the consultant, wasn't from a local entity around here, did the mapping and came back and says, here it is. What we're doing now is differently. We've hired a local firm, we're taking the lead, and we're working step by step with the community so we don't have these problems that Douglas County ran into. And that's why, excuse me, we really wanted to start with this, you know, charter effort to basically do it at a local level by meeting FEMA standards versus what FEMA used to do is coming from the top down, and then you're always constantly fighting with FEMA to try to correct those. So in the short answer, no, it won't fix those, but we are working with FEMA to try to make sure that they're aware of that and that we have the best modeling available. We want to get the best information out there, the most accurate information out there, because if you have wrong information, either way, someone may be in the floodplain that shouldn't be or vice versa, people need to be aware. And that's what we're trying to do is at least make people aware of those so then they can make rational decisions.
And then my last question may be for you, Ed. It may be for Larry. The difference between the FEMA floodway and the flood zone, that number, is that typically where the number comes from for elevation certificates in the building code?
Yeah, when you look at flood certifications, that's where that's coming from. Exactly.
Thank you.
Any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, thank you, Ed and Brenda. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 19. Al, are you going to take us through this?
Thank you. Al Kramer, Carson City Treasurer. Each year, pretty much every year, Carson City takes trustee title to properties that have been there 3 years delinquent on property taxes. We then go to the board in like August and say, board, we want to take this forward to a sale and take the steps to do that. And the board authorizes that step. One of those steps is to take a title search done to see everyone with an interest in the property. And when that happens, we send a certified letter to each person with an interest saying that at the end of this 60 or 90 day period, we're going to take your property and sell it at auction, or if it's a 90 day period, perhaps use it for public purpose. In Carson, we write a 90 day letter that includes the language for both possibilities in the letter. In this case, we have two parcels that were owned by Northridge LLC, which was a Jim Bodden company, which is defunct in the Northridge area of town. Northeast section by the just east of the cemetery, and there were two parcels that were really connecting a street with park property beyond, and I think you have the pictures in your packet, right? So it's very clearly public purpose. In this case, the Parks Department wrote a letter showing that it was public purpose, and that the criteria for accepting this as city property has been met. And so we're at this point, and in fact, the city's been doing the maintenance on that property for many years, And so there's really the impact, the physical impact going forward is the same as it has been in the past. And we're talking about $35 in taxes that would be met at the general fund money, or $35, $32.55, excuse me, in tax money. So it's a relatively minor item, I'd say.
Thank you. Any board comment questions?
What about unintended consequences? There looks like a storm drain through there, and the street looks like it's being pulled apart. And yeah, I understand these are recreation accesses and probably our responsibility, but are we going to get stuck with a big bill for something else?
In a sense, Supervisor McKenna, it really doesn't matter. The entity that owned that property is defunct. It no longer exists. And we've been doing the maintenance on it anyway. It's like, okay, we could send them a bill, but there'd be no one to pay it.
And if I could follow up, too, when we approved the subdivision, the drainage issues in the streets, we accepted for ownership and maintenance. So we basically own the drainage, own the streets. So.
Al, a couple questions. Sure. In our packet, it says that these parcels were supposed to have been dedicated to the city by the developer when he finished the subdivision. Is that correct?
I don't remember saying that, did I?
I'm Juan Guzman, and I had the privilege of being a planner who worked on this subdivision many years ago. Yeah. Now you know how come the dedication never came through.
Mr. Eloquent.
Yeah, better know I'm Mr. Eloquent. That's a private joke. Yes, way back when the subdivision was being reviewed for approval with the final map, there should have been a dedication of those facilities for Carson City. I cannot remember, and I look into the record, why exactly did that not happened. Instead, they were created as separate parcels. But the normal thing, what you would have expected, is that happened at the time of the recordation of the final map. And in this case, it did not happen, and I don't have an answer as to why. It doesn't seem to me that it was by design. It seems to me that it was by...
The difference between the FEMA floodway and the flood zone, that number, is that typically where the number comes from for elevation certificates in the building code?
Yeah, when you look at flood certifications, that's where that's coming from. Exactly.
Thank you.
Any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, thank you, Ed and Brenda. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 19. Al, are you going to take us through this?
Thank you. Al Kramer, Carson City Treasurer. Each year, pretty much every year, Carson City takes trustee title to properties that have been there 3 years delinquent on property taxes. We then go to the board in like August and say, board, we want to take this forward to a sale and take the steps to do that. And the board authorizes that step. One of those steps is to have a title search done to see everyone with an interest in the property. And when that happens, we send a certified letter to each person with an interest saying that at the end of this 60 or 90 day period, we're going to take your property and sell it at auction, or if it's a 90-day period, perhaps use it for public purpose. In Carson, we write a 90-day letter that includes the language for both possibilities in the letter. In this case, we have two parcels that were owned by Northridge LLC, which was a Jim Bodden company, which is defunct in the Northridge area of town, the northeast section by the just east of the cemetery, and there were two parcels that were really connecting a street with park property beyond, and I think you have the pictures in your packet, right? So it's very clearly public purpose. In this case, the Parks Department wrote a letter showing that it was public purpose, and that the criteria for accepting this as city property has been met, And so we're at this point, and in fact, the city's been doing the maintenance on that property for many years. And so there's really the impact, the physical impact going forward is the same as it has been in the past. And we're talking about $35 in taxes that would be met into general fund money, or $35, $32.55, excuse me, in tax money. So it's a relatively minor item, I'd say.
Thank you. Any board comment questions?
What about unintended consequences? There looks like a storm drain through there, and the street looks like it's being pulled apart. And yeah, I understand these are recreation accesses and probably our responsibility, but are we going to get stuck with a big bill for something else?
In a sense, Supervisor McKenna, it really doesn't matter. The entity that owned that property is defunct. It no longer exists. And we've been doing the maintenance on it anyway. It's like, okay, we could send them a bill, but there'd be no one to pay it.
And if I could follow up, too, when we approved the subdivision, the drainage issues in the streets, we accepted for ownership and maintenance. So we basically own the drainage, own the streets. So.
Al, a couple of questions. Sure. In our packet, it says that these parcels were supposed to have been dedicated to the city by the developer when he finished the subdivision. Is that correct?
I don't remember saying that, did I?
I'm Juan Guzman, and I had the privilege of being a planner who worked on this subdivision many years ago. Yeah. Now you know how come the dedication never came through.
Mr. Eloquent.
Yeah, better know I'm Mr. Eloquent. That's a private joke. Yes, way back when the subdivision was being reviewed for approval with the final map, there should have been a dedication of those facilities for Carson City. I cannot remember, and I look into the record, why exactly did that not happen? Instead, they were created as separate parcels. But the normal thing, what you would have expected, is that happened at the time of the recordation of the final map. And in this case, it did not happen, and I don't have an answer as to why. It doesn't seem to me that it was by design. It seems to me that it was by more carelessness than anything else. And I was the planner, so you're looking at the person responsible for it.
And I think a follow-up to that, too, there's confusion under state law on what you could transfer with subdivisions and subdivision maps. You could do easements, but you couldn't do real property. So you had to then have a separate action. And for a lot of these properties, we didn't realize that for a few years. And then we came back and actually started doing the action of doing the formal acceptance of the deed, the document that then transferred real property. So these weren't easements. Had they been easements, they would have been transferred with the map. But in some cases, you can't do that. So
we didn't have easements or get the land dedicated to us when the subdivision was built?
No, not in these circumstances,
okay.
Though.
And who built the improvements? Was it the developer? Okay. Thank you.
There was a great amount of collaboration. Basically, the developer came up with the map. The developer planned bulldozing the hill and having access to Winnie Lane directly. And that raised a few eyebrows among staff and members of the board at the time. And we told him, is there a way of preserving some of the hill? And the developer said, yeah. What if you, number one, pay for it. And number two, pay for it not out of city funds, but out of the residential construction tax. And then number two, the density that I would have gotten otherwise, can I get that somewhere else along the subdivision? So we worked really hard to preserve a section of the hill, which is now Long Park. And these were accesses from the neighborhood into Long Park. Thank you.
Any further board comment on this? Seeing none, any public comment? I bring it back to the board then for motion.
I move to affirm the determination that a public purpose will be served by Carson City's acceptance of two quitclaim tax deeds from the treasurer as tax deed trustee regarding parcel 002-731-01 and 002-731-16, which will further the public purpose of the Parks and Recreation Department.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any more public comment? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Moving on to item number 20, Health and Human Services. Dustin, are you going to take us through this?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Good Mayor, good morning, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the board. I'm Dustin Booth, Division Manager at Carson City Health and Human Services. This is the second reading for Carson City Municipal Code 9.04, Health Division Fees. As you recall, the changes in this Carson City Municipal Code will be adjusting the inspection fee section. Since our first reading, we have not received any other comment or concerns from the public. Since the first reading, I made one typographical change per the request of Supervisor Bronkowski on page 8. I'm available for any questions.
Board discussion? Public comment? I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to adopt on second reading Bill number 113, an ordinance amending the Carson City Municipal Code Title IX, Health and Welfare, Chapter 9.04, Health Division Permits and Fee Schedule, amending Section 9.04.010, definitions to clarify and expand definitions and add a definition of inventory, amending Section 9.04.020, permits required, updating the language of the section to clarify the type of health permits that are issued, amending Section 9.04.030, duties of the permit holder to clarify language, amending Section 9.04.040, permits, approvals, and other requirements to clarify language, update fee language, and add fees from Title 12 into Title 9, amending Section 9.04.050, revocation and suspension to clarify language, amending Section 9.04.060, penalties, addition of language from Section 9.04.065.
More careless than anything else, and I was the planner, so you're looking at the person responsible for it.
And I think a follow-up to that, too, there's confusion under state law on what you could transfer with subdivisions and subdivision maps. You could do easements, but you couldn't do real property. So you had to then have a separate action. And for a lot of these properties, we didn't realize that for a few years. And then we came back and actually started doing the action of doing the formal acceptance of the deed, the document that then transferred real property. So these weren't easements. Had they been easements, they would have been transferred with the map. But some cases you can't do that. So
we didn't have easements or get the land dedicated to us when the subdivision was built?
No, not in these certain circumstances,
okay.
Though.
And who built the improvements? Was it the developer? Okay. Thank you.
There was a great amount of collaboration. Basically, the developer came up with the map. The developer planned bulldozing the hill and having access to Winnie Lane directly. And that raised a few eyebrows among staff and members of the board at the time. And we told him, is there a way of preserving some of the hill? And the developer said, yeah. What if you, number one, pay for it. And number two, pay for it not out of city funds, but out of the residential construction tax. And then number two, the density that I would have gotten otherwise, can I get that somewhere else along the subdivision? So we worked really hard to preserve a section of the hill, which is now Long Park. And these were accesses from the neighborhood into Long Park. Thank you.
Any further board comment on this? Seeing none, any public comment? I bring it back to the board then for motion.
I move to affirm the determination that a public purpose will be served by Carson City's acceptance of two quitclaim tax deeds from the treasurer as tax deed trustee regarding parcel 002-731-01 and 002-731-16, which will further the public purpose of the Parks and Recreation Department.
We have a motion and a second. Any more public comment? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Moving on to item number 20, Health and Human Services. Dustin, are you going to take us through this?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Good Mayor, good morning, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the board. I'm Dustin Booth, Division Manager at Carson City Health and Human Services. This is the second reading for Carson City Municipal Code 9.04, Health Division Fees. As you recall, the changes in this Carson City Municipal Code will be adjusting the inspection fees section. Since our first reading, we have not received any other comment or concerns from the public. Since the first reading, I made one typographical change per the request of Supervisor Bronkowski on page 8. I'm available for any questions.
Board discussion? Public comment? I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to adopt on second reading Bill number 113, an ordinance amending the Carson City Municipal Code Title IX Health and Welfare, Chapter 9.04, Health Division Permits and Fee Schedule, amending Section 9.04.010, definitions to clarify and expand definitions and add a definition of inventory, amending Section 9.04.020, permits required, updating the language of the section to clarify the type of health permits that are issued, amending Section 9.04.030, duties of the permit holder to clarify language, amending Section 9.04040, permits, approvals, and other requirements to clarify language, update fee language, and add fees from Title 12 into Title 9, amending Section 9.04.050, revocation and suspension to clarify language, amending Section 9.04.060, penalties, addition of language from Section 9.04.065, deleting Section 9.04065, additional fees, deleting Section 9.04.070, severability, and other matters properly related thereto.
Ordinance number is 2013-17.
Ordinance number is 2013-17.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, another Health and Human Services issue, item number B. Are you going to take us through that one, too?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Again, for the record, Dustin Booth, Carson City Health and Human Services. This is the second reading for changes in Carson City Municipal Code 9.05, inspection for food establishments. These changes will bring us changes in Carson City Municipal Code will bring us consistent with our current practice in inspections of food establishments. Since our first reading, we have not received any comments or concerns, and no changes have been made.
Any board comments? John.
What's the ordinance number?
2013-18.
Any other board comments? Public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for motion.
I move to adopt on second reading Bill number 114, an ordinance 2013-18, amending the Carson City Municipal Code Title IX, Food Establishments, Chapter 9.05, Food Establishments, updating the language of the section to update inspection frequencies, and by amending the number of inspections, and by updating mobile unit requirements and other matters properly related thereto.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any public comment? Seeing none. Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 21, Human Resources. Melanie, are you going to talk to us about this?
Yes.
Thank
Good
you.
Morning. Good morning. Melanie Bruchetta, Human Resources Director. Before you today, excuse me, is an action to approve the health insurance, dental insurance, and vision insurance plans for Carson City. We recommend that you remain with St. Mary's with a 2.6 increase in the insurance rates for the point of service and the HMO plan. We'll switch from the standard dental insurance to St. Mary's, which will give us a 10% decrease in our dental rates. And VSP, the vision plan, will have a rate decrease of 6.1%.
Board discussion on this.
Melanie, through this process, I think originally we had, I can't remember what the number was originally, but in the second version, we had about a 10% increase, and then I believe we went down to a 5% increase, and now we're at 2.6.
Actually, your increase originally started out at about 32%. I wasn't happy with that, so I sent a demand to St. Mary's requesting that they reconsider their numbers, and they meet with us. It then went down to approximately 21% or 19%, somewhere around there. I still wasn't happy. And they finally gave us a rate plan that we could accept, which was several different options. If we wanted to stay with our current plan, it would increase 8.9%, yet we would still have had plan changes. We felt that this 2.6% rate increase gave us a better plan. We met with the Health Insurance Committee and went over the plan with them, and they too agreed. And rumor has it St. Mary's has never had someone approach them and demand a certain rate increase, which I started out at 6%.
I'd just like to say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Very much.
Have the bargaining units and the employee groups been signed on to this, or do they do that through the insurance committee?
They do that through the insurance committee. Every bargaining unit has at least one representative, typically two, on the insurance committee. We met with the insurance committee, went through the plans, and they and I want to thank them for their cooperation, and they fully support and recommend this plan as well to you.
Any further board comment? Public comment.
Deleting section 9.04065, additional fees. Deleting section 9.04.070, severability, and other matters properly related thereto.
Ordinance number is 2013-17.
Ordinance number is 2013-17.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment. Discussion on the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, item another Health and Human Services issue, item number B. Are you going to take us to that one too?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Again, for the record, Dustin Booth, Carson City Health and Human Services. This is the second reading for changes in Carson City Municipal Code 9.05, inspection for food establishments. These changes will bring us, changes in Carson City Municipal Code will bring us consistent with our current practice in inspections of food establishments. Since our first reading, we have not received any comments or concerns, and no changes have been made.
Any board comments? John.
What's the ordinance number?
2013-18.
Any other board comments? Public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for motion.
I'll make it. I move to adopt on second reading bill number 114, an ordinance 2013-18, amending the Carson City Municipal Code, Title 9, Food Establishments, Chapter 9.05, Food Establishments, updating the language of the section to update inspection frequencies, and by amending the number of inspections, and by updating mobile unit requirements and other matters properly related thereto.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any public comment? Seeing none. Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to item number 21, Human Resources. Melanie, are you going to talk to us about this?
Yes.
Thank
you. Good morning. Melanie Bruchetta, Human Resources Director. Before you today, excuse me, is an action to approve the health insurance, dental insurance, and vision insurance plans for Carson City. We recommend that you remain with St. Mary's with a 2.6 increase in the insurance rates for the point of service and the HMO plan. We'll switch from the standard dental insurance to St. Mary's, which will give us a 10% decrease in our dental rates. And VSP, the vision plan, will have a rate decrease of 6.1%.
Board discussion on this.
Melanie, through this process, I think originally we had, I can't remember what the number was originally, but in the second version, we had about a 10% increase, and then I believe we went down to a 5% increase, and now we're at 2.6.
Actually, your increase originally started out at about 32%. I wasn't happy with that, so I sent a demand to St. Mary's requesting that they reconsider their numbers, and they meet with us. It then went down to approximately 21% or 19%, somewhere around there. I still wasn't happy. And they finally gave us a rate plan that we could accept, which was several different options. If we wanted to stay with our current plan, it would increase 8.9%, yet we would still have had plan changes. We felt that this 2.6% rate increase gave us a better plan. We met with the Health Insurance Committee and went over the plan with them, and they too agreed. And rumor has it St. Mary's has never had someone approach them and demand a certain rate increase, which I started out at 6%.
I'd just like to say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Very much.
Have the bargaining units and the employee groups been signed on to this, or do they do that through the insurance committee?
They do that through the insurance committee. Every bargaining unit has at least one representative, typically two, on the insurance committee. We met with the insurance committee, went through the plans, and they, and I want to thank them for their cooperation, and they fully support and recommend this plan as well to you.
Any further board comment? Public comment? Larry?
Madam Mayor, one thing I would want to mention, though, is what you see here, you know, the increase in the premiums, but our actual medical costs that we budgeted, put a 10% increase in the budget because we got some additional costs from the Affordable Care Act, and there were some other issues there that aren't part of our medical plan. So when we had talked to you sometime before, we said we'd have budgeted 10%, and this was able to help us come in at that 10%. So
The Affordable Care Act fees will actually raise it about another 2.5%. But those are fees that are not fees, they're simply collected by St. Mary's and passed on to the federal government. They are not fees that St. Mary's has any control over.
A follow-up question to that. 3 years, so what would it be, 2017, which is when the federal subsidies end for the health care program, is it anticipated then that our costs will rise a lot at that point?
Well, we don't know. I know Melanie's working with Affordable Care Act folks, and we're seeing a lot of stuff coming through for possible training and explanation, but I don't know that anybody could say for exactly what's really going to happen. We just don't know.
Right. I have been told, though, that our health insurance exchange in the state of Nevada is one of the top-notch exchanges so far throughout the United States.
Just obviously, we probably need to keep an eye on this for future planning, for budget planning.
Yes. Well, one of the issues we have, too, is that our actual utilization rate has been fairly high. So we're working with wellness programs to try to bring our utilization rate down because that's what triggered the original quotes from St. Mary's. So we've got some very high-cost medical experience. So we're looking at that. So the wellness programs that Melanie puts on are key to try to keeping our costs down, the Affordable Care Act. There's just a lot of issues out there that we're constantly working with and working with the labor groups, working with the employees to try to get the, because this is a big one. This is a very, I mean, this is an expensive program. So.
This is the most difficult part of my job every year. When finance gives me a budget, I have to work within.
I understand. All right, is there any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to approve the employee health and dental insurance plan with St. Mary's and the employee vision plan with VSP.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any public comment on that? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Melanie. Thank Appreciate you. It. Item number 22, Public Works and Planning. I don't see Lee in the audience. Is Janice going to bring us through this issue?
Janice,
not to put you on the spot, thank you.
So Janice Bro with planning for the record. This item is for possible action, discussion, and possible action to authorize the mayor to sign a quitclaim deed and declaration of value to accept the transfer of properties on Brown Street from Lyon County to Carson City, APNs 008-303-15. And -16-21-36-37-39. So this has been an item that's we've been trying to get done for quite a while. Lyon County was the lead agency for the Western Nevada Home Consortium. They stepped down as the lead, but they still had these Brown Street properties that they wanted to do something with. And since the project failed to materialize, they wanted to just transfer the property or get rid of it somehow. So their first option is transfer it to Carson City. And if we decide not to accept it, then they would probably be able to transfer to another entity, maybe a housing authority, or sell it. So we're here to talk about just Carson City accepting this property, and there's backup information on the phase one environmental, and we've gone back and forth on through emails on, is this recent enough? Have we really analyzed the property enough to know that if there's any hazards on it? So I think it's just up to the board to decide if they want to do this transfer at this point.
Thank you, Janice, I appreciate that. I'll open this up to a board discussion, Brad.
Madam Mayor, one thing I would want to mention, though, is what you see here, you know, the increase in the premiums, but our actual medical costs that we budgeted, we put a 10% increase in the budget because we got some additional costs from the Affordable Care Act, and there were some other issues there that aren't part of our medical plans. So when we had talked to you sometime before, we said we'd have budgeted 10%, and this was able to help us come in at that 10%. So.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act fees will actually raise it about another 2.5%. But those are fees that are not fees. They're simply collected by St. Mary's and passed on to the federal government. They are not fees that St. Mary's has any control over.
A follow-up question to that. 3 years, so what would it be, 2017, which is when the federal subsidies end for the health care program? Is it anticipated then that our costs will rise a lot at that point?
Well, we don't know. I know Melanie's working with Affordable Care Act folks, and we're seeing a lot of stuff coming through for possible training and explanation, but I don't know that anybody could say for exactly what's really going to happen. We just don't know.
Right. I have been told, though, that our health insurance exchange in the state of Nevada is one of the top-notch exchanges so far throughout the United States.
Just obviously, we probably need to keep an eye on this for future planning, for budget planning.
Yes, well, one of the issues we have too is that our actual utilization rate has been fairly high. So we're working with wellness programs to try to bring our utilization rate down, because that's what triggered the original quotes from St. Mary's. So we've got some very high cost medical experience. So we're looking at that. So the wellness programs that Melanie puts on are key to try to keep our costs down, the Affordable Care Act. There's just a lot of issues out there that we're constantly working with and working with the labor groups, working with the employees to try to get this, because this is a big one. This is a very, I mean, this is an expensive program. So.
This is the most difficult part of my job every year when finance gives me a budget I have to work within.
I understand. All right, is there any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to approve the employee health and dental insurance plan with St. Mary's and the employee vision plan with VSP.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any public comment on that? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Item number 22, Public Works and Planning. I don't see Lee in the audience. Is Janice going to bring us through this issue?
Janice,
not to put you on the spot, thank you.
So Janice Brode with planning for the record. This item is for possible action, discussion, and possible action to authorize the mayor to sign a quitclaim deed and declaration of value to accept the transfer of properties on Brown Street from Lyon County to Carson City, APNs 008-303-15. And -16-21-36-37-39. So this has been an item that's we've been trying to get done for quite a while. Lyon County was the lead agency for the Western Nevada Home Consortium. They stepped down as the lead, but they still had these Brown Street properties that they wanted to do something with. And since the project failed to materialize, they wanted to just transfer the property or get rid of it somehow. So their first option is transfer it to Carson City. And if we decide not to accept it, then they would probably be able to transfer to another entity, maybe a housing authority, or sell it. So we're here to talk about just Carson City accepting this property, and there's backup information on the phase one environmental, and we've gone back and forth on through emails on, is this recent enough? Have we really analyzed the property enough to know that if there's any hazards on it? So I think it's just up to the board to decide if they want to do this transfer at this point.
Thank you, Janice. I appreciate that. I'll open this up to a board discussion. Brad?
I'd like to commend staff for putting up with me the last couple of weeks and my many, many requests for due diligence on this property. Working with staff, though, I am satisfied that we've done our due diligence and that there are no significant issues with this property that are unanticipated, which, frankly, is the best that we can do until the property is actually developed. So thank you all.
John.
Okay, so the property's okay to get, but what are we going to do with it?
I mean, I think that's the topic for a future discussion. Once we get it and you accept that, then at that point, we can come back to the board with options. You can sell it. You can give it away to qualified entities for affordable housing. There's a lot of arrangements you can do, and I think at that point, we'd want to come back to the board with those options and say, okay, what's your choice?
But there's no restrictions on what we can do with it. We can sell it for money.
Right.
Okay.
There are no restrictions. It's not restricted in any form that I'm aware of.
No. Speaking out of turn, sell it for as much money as you can possibly get.
Yeah. That you know, if we're going to do that, we probably would, you know, the direction would be to have you have us have it appraised and, you know, go through those kinds of things, and, you know, then we'd see where we'd go there. But we thought we'd do it step at a time and then come back.
Is it going to cost? Well, it's in Carson City anyway, and so we have to police it, et cetera, but we're going to have to put fences up and, you know, chase people off of it and clean up the garbage that's dumped there, that sort of thing. Is it going to cost us any money?
More than likely. Yeah, I mean, really, we have to take care of trash, weeds. If we have issues with people dumping stuff, we'll have to deal with that. It is ours. I mean, there's just no way around that. So if you accept it.
Even if we don't.
Yeah. Even if we don't, I don't know what we do anyway. I mean, we're still kind of an issue with it. But, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. It's no different than some of the issues we're having in some of the other properties around town. It's pretty typical.
And I would ask staff to come back to us as soon as possible with scenarios for disposition of the property. And a follow-up question, are we required to get the property appraised if we decided to move forward with the sale of it, or can we
yes.
put it up to an auction?
No, you have to have two. I believe we have to have two appraisals, and then we go to public auction.
Juan, do you want to speak to this?
Yeah, you will need two appraisals unless you agree to set the value in one hearing. So you will do one appraisal, conduct a value hearing, and that will let you off the hook on a second appraiser. And normally that's what staff have been doing when we bring items to you. Appraisers really do not like to out of a contract and a formal study venture on value, but they have been working with us in giving us a range, in giving us comps. And then out of those comps, we try to establish a range of value. So we can get that for the board without spending money on a formal appraisal. But that is just, you know, a point of discussion, and then we'll see from there on. At the time that we decide to sell it, we will need to appraise it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further board discussion? Public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to authorize the mayor to sign a quitclaim deed and declaration of value to accept the transfer of properties on Brown Street from Lyon County to Carson City, APN 008-300-15, 16, 21, 36, 37, and 39.
Just one correction. It's APN 008-303-300, just in case.
I accept the correction.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment? Bring it back to the board. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 23. Larry, are you going to take us through this?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a sister action to an action you took some time ago on Autumn Village.
I'd like to commend staff for putting up with me the last couple of weeks and my many, many requests for due diligence on this property. Working with staff, though, I am satisfied that we've done our due diligence and that there are no significant issues with this property that are unanticipated, which, frankly, is the best that we can do until the property is actually developed. So thank you all.
John.
Okay, so the property's okay to get, but what are we going to do with it? I mean,
I think that's the topic for a future discussion. Once we get it and you accept that, then at that point we can come back to the board with options. You can sell it. You can give it away to qualified entities for affordable housing. There's a lot of arrangements you can do, and I think at that point we'd want to come back to the board with those options and say, okay, what's your choice?
But there's no restrictions on what we can do with it. We can sell it for money.
Right.
Okay.
There are no restrictions. It's not restricted in any form that I'm aware of.
No. Speaking out of turn, sell it for as much money as you can possibly get.
Yeah. That you know, if we're going to do that, we probably would, you know, the direction would be to have you have us have it appraised and, you know, go through those kinds of things, and, you know, then we'd see where we'd go there. But we thought we'd do it step at a time and then come back.
Is it going to cost? Well, it's in Carson City anyway, and so we have to police it, et cetera, but we're going to have to put fences up and, you know, chase people off of it and clean up the garbage and stuff there, that sort of thing. Is it going to cost us any money?
More than likely. Yeah, I mean, really, we have to take care of trash, weeds. If we have issues with people dumping stuff, we'll have to deal with that. It is ours. I mean, there's just no way around that. So, if you accept it. Even if we do it, I don't know what we do anyway. I mean, we're still kind of an issue with it. But, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. It's no different than some of the issues we're having at some of the other properties around town. It's pretty typical.
And I would ask staff to come back to us as soon as possible with scenarios for disposition of the property. And a follow-up question, are we required to get the property appraised if we decided to move forward with the sale of it, or can we put it up to an auction?
No, you have to have two. I believe we have to have two appraisals, and then we go to public auction.
Juan, do you want to speak to this?
Yeah, you will need two appraisals unless you agree to set the value in one hearing. So you will do one appraisal, conduct a value hearing, and that will let you off the hook on a second appraiser. And normally that's what staff have been doing when we bring items to you. Appraisers really do not like to out of a contract and a formal study venture on value, but they have been working with us in giving us a range, in giving us comps. And then out of those comps, we try to establish a range of value. So we can get that for the board without spending money on a formal appraisal. But that is just, you know, a point of discussion, and then we'll see from there on. At the time that we decide to sell it, we will need to appraise it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further board discussion? Public comment on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I move to authorize the mayor to sign a quitclaim deed and declaration of value to accept the transfer of properties on Brown Street from Lyon County to Carson City, APN 008-300-15, 16, 21, 36, 37, and 39.
Just one correction. It's APN 008-303-300, just in case.
I accept the correction.
We have a motion and a second. Public comment? Bring it back to the board. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 23. Larry, are you going to take us through this?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a sister action to an action you took some time ago on Autumn Village 1. And the reason we're bringing this forward, I'll kind of run through what happened in Autumn Village 1, where there's a provision that they have the right under statute to, although we stayed in an agreement that they're to pay property taxes, they have a right, I think the way we worded it, that they pay any property taxes that's due to be paid. And they have a right under statute to go in and claim an exemption, which means the property taxes under that are zero, and therefore they don't have to pay anything. We had an agreement in the Autumn Village 1 that says if they don't pay the property tax, then there's a fee they pay us as part of the lease agreement that's equivalent to the property tax. And what we were doing is we were actually collecting the portion that would have been due the state, the school district, the subconservancy, but we had no mechanism to give that money to those entities. So we came back under Autumn Village 1 and modified that to say that if they're going to get an exemption to pay the real property tax, then the formula property tax would only be the Carson City's portion, if that makes any sense. So we did that in Autumn Village 1 with the idea that they were also looking for some reduction in their cost to be able to refinance. That took care of that because we were actually saying, okay, as long as you're paying what you would give us normally, we're okay with that, and that gave them the break because they no longer then had to pay the state and the school district portion because they were exempt from property tax. There's an Autumn Village 2, which is a sister development to that, and it has the same language in there. And we thought, you know, rather than wait till this all goes, if they wait for them to claim the exemption, wait for them to do those things, let's put the language in that says if they get the exemption, then immediately they owe us our portion. Because what had happened in the past with Autumn Village 1 is there had been kind of a hiatus where nobody knew what happened in between them getting the exemption and them owing us money for our city portion. So what we wanted to do is close that gap to say, okay, if you do this, then this happens. There's no gap. There's no default. There's no periods of time that we're not getting the payment due. So it's kind of a preemption to make sure that we always get the amount due us from this project. So, and Randy, is that a fair statement, I guess? Or?
Yeah, and what I did in drafting this was to just mimic the language from the Autumn Village 1 so that they have the same rights if they apply for the exemption goes in place, and then they have a payment in lieu of those taxes due to the city, and it would be just the Carson City portion.
Thank you. Brad, did you have a comment?
Yes, on page 104 of amendment number 2 to the ground lease, there's a date correction in the third whereas. The extension to the term of the ground lease was through noon on January 1st of 2063, not 2061. And then my next question is, are we raising a flag to Autumn Hills 2 by bringing this amendment to them to go apply for the exemption?
They were already contemplating that because they're the same people that own Autumn Village 1, and they had thought they'd apply for both 1 and 2, and when we dealt with 1, then it became evident they hadn't done 2. They weren't sure they were going to, but I suspect that they are. But that flag had already been raised with the dialogue we'd had on Autumn Village 1.
Okay, and then Larry, you and I had an email exchange about the language in 2A2 and 3E. And I'm still not completely clear, because in 2A2, it does say, in the event tenant applies for the exemption or gets the exemption without applying for it, then they would owe an amount equal to the total amount of all real property taxes that would have otherwise been imposed but for the exemption. To the me, I read that and I say, okay, if they get the exemption, then they still owe the full amount of ad valorem tax, even though in 3E it says that they would only need to pay the Carson City portion of it. So I still think that those two items are in conflict, unless I'm misreading it.
And that's because that language originates from our amendment of Village 1, where in fact they did have the full responsibility, and I just mimicked the language so that they were identical. I didn't want to create any issues by having different language for Village 1 and Village 2. In application, it means they owe all the taxes, but when you come down to paragraph 3, the new paragraph 3, then they're only responsible for the Carson City portion. Yeah, I understand your problem with that, but I was just trying to be consistent with how we had worded the original one.
And the reason we're bringing this forward, I'll kind of run through what happened in Autumn Village 1, where there's a provision that they have the right under statute to, although we state in an agreement that they're to pay property taxes, they have a right, I think the way we word it, that they pay any property taxes that's due to be paid. And they have a right under statute to go in and claim an exemption, which means the property taxes under that are zero, and therefore they don't have to pay anything. We had an agreement in the Autumn Village 1 that says if they don't pay the property tax, then there's a fee they pay us as part of the lease agreement that's equivalent to the property tax. And what we were doing is we were actually collecting the portion that would have been due the state, the school district, the subconservancy, but we had no mechanism to give that money to those entities. So we came back under Autumn Village 1 and modified that to say that if they're going to get an exemption to pay the real property tax, then the formula property tax would only be the Carson City's portion, if that makes any sense. So we did that on Autumn Village 1 with the idea that they were also looking for some reduction in their cost to be able to refinance. That took care of that, because we were actually saying, okay, as long as you're paying what you would give us normally, we're okay with that, and that gave them the break because they no longer then had to pay the state and the school district portion because they were exempt from property tax. There's an Autumn Village 2, which is a sister development to that, and it has the same language in there. And we thought, you know, rather than wait till this all goes, if they wait for them to claim the exemption, wait for them to do those things, let's put the language in that says if they get the exemption, then immediately they owe us our portion. Because what had happened in the past with Autumn Village 1 is there had been kind of a hiatus where nobody knew what happened in between them getting the exemption and them owing us money for our city portion. So what we wanted to do is close that gap to say, okay, if you do this, then this happens. There's no gap. There's no default. There's no periods of time that we're not getting the payment due. So it's kind of a preemption to make sure that we always get the amount due us from this project. So,
and Randy, is that a fair statement, I guess?
Yeah, and what I did in drafting this was to just mimic the language from the Autumn Village 1 so that they have the same rights if they apply for the exemption goes in place, and then they have a payment in lieu of those taxes due to the city, and it would be just the Carson City portion.
Thank you. Brad, did you have a comment?
Yes, on page 104 of amendment number 2 to the ground lease, there's a date correction in the third whereas. The extension to the term of the ground lease was through noon on January 1st of 2063, not 2061. And then my next question is, are we raising a flag to Autumn Hills 2 by bringing this amendment to them to go apply for the exemption?
They were already contemplating that because they're the same people that own Autumn Village 1, and they had thought they'd apply for both 1 and 2, and when we dealt with 1, then it became evident they hadn't done 2. They weren't sure they were going to, but I suspect that they are. But that flag had already been raised with the dialogue we'd had on Autumn Village 1.
Okay, and then Larry, you and I had an email exchange about the language in 2A2 and 3E. And I'm still not completely clear, because in 2A2, it does say, in the event tenant applies for the exemption or gets the exemption without applying for it, then they would owe an amount equal to the total amount of all real property taxes that would have otherwise been imposed but for the exemption. I read that and I say, okay, if they get the exemption, then they still owe the full amount of ad valorem tax, even though in 3E it says that they would only need to pay the Carson City portion of it. So I still think that those two items are in conflict, unless I'm misreading it.
And that's because that language originates from our amendment of Village 1, where, in fact, they did have the full responsibility, and I just mimicked the language so that they were identical. I didn't want to create any issues by having different language for Village 1 and Village 2. In application, it means they owe all the taxes, but when you come down to paragraph 3, the new paragraph 3, then they're only responsible for the Carson City portion. Yeah, I understand your problem with that, but I was just trying to be consistent with how we had worded the original one.
So they're clear, though, that they don't have to pay the full amount. They only pay the Carson City portion.
Yes, I think they're clear on that, and we certainly have made a record of that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other board discussion on this? Public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring this back to the board for a motion. Okay, go ahead, John.
I move to approve and authorize the mayor to sign amendment number 2 of the ground lease between the Seasons 2 Limited Partnership, Autumn Village 2, and Carson City, which provides that the consideration for the lease will be in part a payment in lieu of ad valorem taxes for this entity in the event that they obtain a tax exemption pursuant to NRS 361.082. Such payment to be calculated as a normal ad valorem tax, but only that portion of the tax attributable to Carson City's portion of the tax is payable under the lease.
Have a motion and a second. Public comment? Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 24, to appoint a member of the Board of Supervisors to the Nevada Association of Counties Board of Directors to fill an unexpired term ending December 31st, 2013. Jim, I understand you submitted your resignation to this board. Can you just talk to us about why?
It just conflicted with some personal business I have. These meetings are held on a Friday afternoon, which I was unaware of when I volunteered my services. When I went there, I just cannot work out my timetables to accommodate meetings held on a Friday afternoon in the middle at that time frame. So right now I can't do that, and the Carson City would be without representation there, and I can't make those meetings. So I didn't know that it was held on a Friday.
John. Given that legislature's out of session, kind of a quiet time, the mayor's not here, are we harmed if we don't appoint today, Larry? I mean, can we defer this until the mayor's here, the full board's here?
You certainly can.
And we can talk about stuff.
You certainly can.
We may need to realign all the committee assignments. I don't know. You know, it's you are elected. You're here. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. The mayor tells you where you're going to go, and then we suddenly have conflicts. So I think let the mayor. I think our policy, if not our statute, says the mayor appoints to committees, and nothing against Karen, and she likes the power and all that, but let's wait for Bob to come back.
Not a problem. We can certainly do that. You'll take a look. It may not be even the next meeting, depending on the nature of the time frame, but we'll do it within a couple meetings. So,
well, and I think you're right. Nothing's going to happen
I don't think there's a lot going on
three
in
months.
Meeting anyway, so. Everybody's kind of probably taking a breather anyway, so it's probably an opportune time. If that's the wish, desire of the board, we'll bring it back at a later date.
Shall we have a motion to defer this?
Just table it.
We'll just table this then for free future discussion.
Just a motion. Motion to table does it.
Okay. Go ahead.
I move to table this item. Second.
That's it.
Public comment?
You don't even take a motion.
Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. We move on to non-action items. Larry, any legislative matters that need to be reported on?
Well, I think yes, and we will have a full-blown report at the next meeting. I did send an email to everybody saying that we had discussed it at the Western Nevada Legislative Commission Coalition last time we met about having Mary Walker come in and do her year-end report or session-end report. So we'll do that probably first thing in the morning right after, if there's any presentation, she'll probably be right after that. And then she has to be up in Douglas County at 11 and then Lyon County, so we're trying to do them all. But I think the two bills that we were following closely, and I'll get these numbers wrong probably, but AB 312, which was a Charter Review Committee bill, that was amended in the Senate, and there was concurrence, I believe, in the Assembly, and I don't know. I think that's probably on its way someplace, but there seems to be agreement with.
So they're clear, though, that they don't have to pay the full amount. They only pay the Carson City portion.
Yes, I think they're clear on that, and we certainly have made a record of that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other board discussion on this? Public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring this back to the board for a motion. Okay, go ahead, John.
I move to approve and authorize the mayor to sign amendment number 2 of the ground lease between the Seasons 2 Limited Partnership, Autumn Village 2, and Carson City, which provides that the consideration for the lease will be in part a payment in lieu of ad valorem taxes for this entity in the event that they obtain a tax exemption pursuant to NRS 361.082, such payment to be calculated as a normal ad valorem tax, but only that portion of the tax attributable to Carson City's portion of the tax is payable under the lease.
Have a motion and a second. Public comment? Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 24, to appoint a member of the Board of Supervisors to the Nevada Association of Counties Board of Directors to fill an unexpired term ending December 31st, 2013. Jim, I understand you submitted your resignation to this board. Can you just talk to us about why?
It just conflicted with some personal business I have. These meetings are held on a Friday afternoon, which I was unaware of when I volunteered my services. When I went there, I just cannot work out my timetables to accommodate meetings held on a Friday afternoon in the middle at that time frame. So right now I can't do that, and the Carson City would be without representation there, and I can't make those meetings. So I didn't know that it was held on a Friday.
Given that legislature out of session, kind of a quiet time, the mayor's not here, are we harmed if we don't appoint today, Larry? I mean, can we defer this until the mayor's here, the full board's here?
You certainly can.
And we can talk about stuff.
You certainly can.
We may need to realign all the committee assignments. I don't know. You know, it's you are elected. You're here. It's exciting. The mayor tells you where you're going to go, and then we suddenly have conflicts. So I think let the mayor. I think our policy, if not our statute, says the mayor appoints to committees. And nothing against Karen, and she likes the power and all that. But let's wait for Bob to come back.
Not a problem. We can certainly do that. You'll take a look. It may not be even the next meeting, depending on the nature of the time frame, but we'll do it within a couple meetings. So,
well, and I think you're right. Nothing's going to happen.
I don't think there's a lot going on
three
in
months.
Maine anyway. So everybody's kind of probably taking a breather anyway. So it's probably an opportune time. If that's the wish, desire of the board, we'll bring it back at a later date.
Shall we have a motion to defer this?
Just table it.
We'll just table this then for free future discussion.
Just a motion to table does it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Table this item.
Second.
That's it.
Public comment?
I don't even take a motion.
Board discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. We move on to non-action items. Larry, any legislative matters that need to be reported on?
Well, I think yes, and we will have a full-blown report the next meeting. I did send an email to everybody saying that we had discussed it at the Western Nevada Legislative Coalition last time we met about having Mary Walker come in and do her year-end report, or session-end report. So we'll do that probably first thing in the morning, right after, if there's any presentation, she'll probably be right after that. And then she has to be up in Douglas County at 11 and then Lyon County, so trying to do them all. But I think the two bills that we were following closely, and I'll get these numbers wrong probably, but AB 312, which was a Charter Review Committee bill, that was amended in the Senate, and there was concurrence, I believe, in the Assembly, and I don't know, I think that's probably on its way someplace. But there seems to be agreement with the idea that the legislative officials would appoint their members to the Charter Review Committee. And then there was an amendment to create a mechanism for the Charter Review Committee to take an action item to the legislature if the Board of Supervisors refused to take one on their own volition. The amendment seemed to make sense that came out of the Senate, so I don't have the exact language in front of me, but it seemed to be okay. I think it's okay. And you read about the ward voting. The governor vetoed that. So I believe that what that does is put our question back on the ballot to discuss ward voting. So we'll be bringing that back to you. Is the next general election or the next election?
General.
So that's 2 years, a year from now?
Alan Glover, for the record, that will go on the general election ballot, but the sooner you can develop that language and get it to our office,
yeah.
Frankly, I think the better off we are, because I could then go ahead and appoint the committees to write the arguments for and against, and give them some time to discuss it. And the sooner we do that, from my end of it, the better off we are. Let's don't wait till January and then try and get it all done.
Agreed. And we'll start doing that. And that one, if you remember, the question was to have ward voting for the primary, the top two members out of the ward then would be voted on in the general election by everybody. So the ward voting would get you out of the – or the primary election would be a ward voting would get you out of the, that into the general election at citywide.
So, Larry, who's are you going to appoint people to write the language? Is that how that's going to work?
That Alan does.
No, I appoint.
You do? Okay.
We advertise to get three people on each side. And again, my comment on that, I don't care what their position is. Can they write well?
Yeah. We'll bring back the process to you. We've done that before. We'll maybe put together a time schedule. I'll work with Alan's office and the DA's office, and we'll put together what, you know, the triggers that have to happen and what's responsible for the board and staff and all that kind of stuff. So we'll do that.
Thank you. Larry, anything?
The second thing is that we've been working with the, I don't know, I guess it's the downtown group or the 2020 group. They are not ready to bring anything forward on the 20th. They're having difficulties getting their plan together. They don't want to be premature, at least the indications we have, about bringing something that's not ready. So I think the indication was is that from, at least from staff standpoint, is it would probably make more sense to have a complete plan than it would be to come in on a partial plan, because I don't know what you would do then. So I think the indication is we're probably not going to be bringing anything back on the 20th. So I don't know what the time frame will be. We're waiting to get official word from that group to say, okay, here's what we want to do. I think one of the things that they want to expand a little bit on is maybe moving it out to the corridors to the north, south, and to the east so that we have a comprehensive economic development plan for the city, not just the downtown core. So I'm waiting to hear more on that, but I do know that they're not ready to have stuff to us, which they would have to have to us by this Friday to have it on the 20th agenda, and it's just we don't have anything. So anyway.
Thank you, Larry, for that. I appreciate it. Anything else?
The portal bill died.
Pardon?
The portal bill died. The portal, the silver portal?
No, it did not. I'm sorry. We think it got cleaned up with a memorandum of understanding that was incorporated as part of the attached materials that the Secretary of State was bringing forward, which basically we believe gives us the right to enter into an MOU that says that we don't need to do anything on the portal until our normal process of upgrading our software programs allows for that to happen, or if we elect to do something on our own to go out there and write our own code to do this. The problem we have is that our software program that is not all web-based throughout the whole unit, and to do that will take several upgrades through HTE, and we think that cost is somewhere between $300,000 to $500,000, and that'll happen over a period of time. If we were to write code to do it right now, we're looking at anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000. So it's an expensive process. What we'd rather do is, as we do normal upgrades for our software, we include the modules that allow the idea that the legislative officials would appoint their members to the Charter Review Committee, and then there was an amendment to create a mechanism for the Charter Review Committee to take an action item to the legislature if the Board of Supervisors refused to take one on their own volition. The amendment seemed to make sense that came out of the Senate, so I don't have the exact language in front of me, but it seemed to be okay. I think it's okay. And you read about the ward voting. The governor vetoed that. So I believe that what that does is put our question back on the ballot to discuss ward voting. So we'll be bringing that back to you in the next general election or the next election?
General.
So that's 2 years, a year from now?
Alan Glover, for the record, that will go on the general election ballot, but the sooner you can develop that language and get it to our office, frankly, I think the better off we are, because I could then go ahead and appoint the committees to write the arguments for and against and give them some time to discuss it. And the sooner we do that, from my end of it, the better off we are. Let's don't wait till January and then try and get it all done.
Agreed. And we'll start. And that one, if you remember, the question was to have ward voting for the primary, the top two members out of the ward then would be voted on in the general election by everybody. So the ward voting would get you out of the – the primary election would be a ward voting would get you out of the, that into the general election at citywide.
So, Larry, are you going to appoint people to write the language? Is that how that's going to work?
That Alan does.
No, I appoint.
You do? Okay.
We advertise to get three people on each side. And again, my comment on that, I don't care what their position is. Can they write well?
Yeah. We'll bring back the process to you. We've done that before. We'll maybe put together a time schedule. I'll work with Alan's office and the DA's office and we'll put together what, you know, the triggers that have to happen and what's responsible for the board and staff and all that kind of stuff. So we'll do that.
Thank you. Larry, anything?
The second thing is that we've been working with the, I don't want to call it, I guess it's the downtown group or the 2020 group. They are not ready to bring anything forward on the 20th. They're having difficulties getting their plan together. They don't want to be premature, at least the indications we have, about bringing something that's not ready. So I think the indication was is that, from at least from a staff standpoint, is it would probably make more sense to have a complete plan than it would be to come in on a partial plan, because I don't know what you would do then. So I think the indication is we're probably not going to be bringing anything back on the 20th. So I don't know what the time frame will be. We're waiting to get official word from that group to say, okay, here's what we want to do. I think one of the things that they want to expand a little bit on is maybe moving it out to the corridors to the north, south, and to the east so that we have a comprehensive economic development plan for the city, not just the downtown core. So I'm waiting to hear more on that, but I do know that they're not ready to have stuff to us, which they would have to have to us by this Friday to have it on the 20th agenda, and it's just we don't have anything. So.
Thank you, Larry, for that. I appreciate it. Anything else?
The portal bill died.
Pardon?
The portal bill died. The portal, the silver portal.
No, it did not. I'm sorry. We think it got cleaned up with a memorandum of understanding that was incorporated as part of the attached materials that the Secretary of State was bringing forward, which basically we believe gives us the right to enter into an MOU that says that we don't need to do anything on the portal until our normal process of upgrading our software programs allows for that to happen, or if we elect to do something on our own to go out there and write our own code to do this. The problem we have is that our software program that is not all web-based throughout the whole unit. And to do that, we'll take several upgrades through HTE, and we think that that cost is somewhere between $300,000 to $500,000, and that'll happen over a period of time. If we were to write code to do it right now, we're looking at anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000. So it's an expensive process. What we'd rather do is, as we do normal upgrades for our software, we include the modules that allow us to then comply with the portal requirements. And I believe what I understand and what has been told to us by the Secretary of State is that we can put that language in the MOU that says, okay, we agree to do this, but here's how our time frame works, based on availability of software updates, the versions we get from our vendor, those sorts of things. So, and I think there's several more that Mary will talk about that I don't know offhand, and I'd be a little probably not a good idea to even talk about them at this stage.
Is there any status review of projects? Jim, you have a question?
Yeah, if I may, I just wanted to back up just for a split second and ask, is the Group 2020, are they working with the Redevelopment Authority on the different corridors and what they can do, or just and not asking, or could they be working with them? I don't know how to phrase that correctly.
I think what it was is that the 2020 group is the downtown businesses. They kind of need to figure out what they want to do first before they come to the city or even redevelopment, because it seems like it needs to be and I think that's the sense I got from the board, was it needs to be a business-driven activity, not a city-driven. So we're there to facilitate and to help, but we're not going to be the driving force. They need to kind of decide what they want to do. So I think they're still working internally, and they're not really reaching out to either redevelopment or us as city yet, because they have nothing to really talk to them about. So But once they do, then we'll bring in the appropriate agency, that redevelopment, city, wherever it needs to go. But I don't think there's been any real formal correspondence at all.
Thank you. All right. And then, Larry, any status review of projects?
The only active one we got going is the regional pipeline, and that I believe Andy had talked about the last time we talked about race and stuff. So there are no new surprises or hitches or anything there. So I think that's going along smoothly. I do know that there have been an issue with rates between Minden and Gardner, between Minden and Douglas County. That's been resolved, so you'll see come before you a modification of the regional agreement that talks about the rates that we'll pay Washoe County and Minden for water. I think it changes it nominally a cent or two. I mean, it's not really not much at all, but it makes us all consistent, and it resolves an issue that they were having down south. So that I think Andy will be bringing forward in the next three or four meetings, something like that.
And then any internal communications or administrative matters?
None that I'm aware of.
We do have correspondence from Shelley Aldean, who's our representative on the TRPA board. Does anyone want to read that into the record, or can it just be submitted?
It's part of the record now.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. Status reports, comments from the board? I just want to comment that Janice Ayers' service is tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church on the corner of Division and Musser. And there will be a reception that follows at Adele's after that. Any other staff comments?
No.
Public comment? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.